All right.
Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and light me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight.
All right, all right, all right. How's it going, everybody? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. We're here till 5 a.m. I am your overnight dude every weekday morning. 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. And, yeah, and then Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5 and the great Steve Cochran at 6 with your morning drive. It's Wednesday, and that means Wild Card Wednesday. You're being Wild Card Wednesday. And that's one. It's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. We'll play them a little bit later, but get your requests for Wild Card Wednesday in right now. 312-981-7200. Coming up in just a few minutes here after the 1:30 news, in fact, Kevin Powell is going to join us. He's our good buddy. He does sports every weekday afternoon on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVellantes, covers the sports beat. He also has a podcast called Powell at the Park. You can get it at WGNRadio.com or WGN Plus. We love to have Kevin on to talk some sports. And also that means we get to hear some Bill Withers, because if you're a regular listener of the show, you know how much Kevin Powell loves the Bill Withers. So that's the theme songs that we play for Kevin when he's here. So Kevin Powell's going to join us, and you can follow him on Twitter at kpowell720, P-O-W-E-L-L, kpowell720. And we're going to talk sports with Kevin right after the 1:30 news. Also coming up, we're going to talk about, you know, everybody knows that there are a ton of method actors, you know, in theater and on film. And so we are going to talk about, these are real incidents when method acting goes way too far. So we're going to talk about method acting going too far. That's coming up. We're going to talk about some weird food combinations that definitely should not exist. And then, as it turns out, a lot of these things that you think you're doing right, you're doing wrong. And we'll tell you what you're doing wrong. So all of that is coming up, and you can join us at 312-981-7200 for talk, text. Anytime you want to jump in, we would love to hear from you. Also for your Wild Card Wednesday requests, 312-981-7200. Follow us on Twitter, and that's at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. So, lots of other stuff coming in, up on the show. So, stay tuned for that. Let me say hello to the crew this morning and, my producer, Tom Hush. Tom, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Yeah. Good.
Well, it was my dad's birthday yesterday, so I spent a little bit of time celebrating him and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's good. And happy birthday. Very cool. All right. So we had a nice turnout for the man who knew too much.
Which is exciting because it's an amazing flick.
Yeah, it was really great. I'd never seen it on the big screen before. And it was really... I mean, it was great. That VistaVision Technicolor, it was awesome. And we had a nice crowd too, and a lot of people had never seen it before, which was nice. I always, you know, whenever we do the film clubs, I always ask people if they've whatever film we're seeing, have you seen it? And a pretty good response. Like almost everybody in the theater had never seen it on the big screen, but there was a good portion of people who had never seen it before. It was their first time seeing it, which is always cool. So, that was fun.
Was there anybody trying to compare it to his original version?
A lot of people didn't even know he had an original version.
Really?
Yeah. And I know that almost everybody in the room had not seen the original version. You know, some people were definitely aware, but you know, almost everybody in the room was like, "Nope, never seen it." So I prefer the 56 version.
Yeah, even 34. Hitch prefers that one.
Yeah, but it was fun. It was fun seeing it on the big screen. And I want to thank everybody for coming out. We're doing another Hitchcock movie May 7th. We're going to be showing North by Northwest with Cary Grant, which is just a really great film and an unbelievably entertaining movie. So we'll give you more details about that. Tickets are on sale already, though. If you want to get your seats ready to go, you want to reserve your seats for North by Northwest on the big screen on Tuesday, May 7th at the AMC Rosemont 18. Get those tickets, and you can reserve them right now. And it's amctheaters.com, amctheaters.com. So it was a fun night last night. Let's get to the newsroom, and it's Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic.
Hey, what's up, Nick? Good morning.
How you doing, man?
Very well.
Yeah. All right. All right. Cubs are supposed to play tonight.
Yeah, yeah.
But hopefully we'll get the game. They'll get the game in, right? Is there rain? Is there rain or sleet or something in the forecast?
I don't think it would be the rain that stops it, because it's supposed to be just off and on rain. You know,
But it's going to be cold though.
Yeah, the temperatures. But then, you know, I don't know. Can they stop again the game just because it's cold? Would they? I don't know. I know I know he doesn't like it.
Yeah,
and I agree with him. But you know, I don't know.
I think they have canceled games because of
The plan's to go ahead.
Ahead. Yeah,
game
and
two.
They got a night game again on Thursday. I think it's a night game.
I get to at least watch this one tonight. I'll wake up for it.
And they'll have
7:05.
7:05 on tonight or Thursday. Tonight is 7:05.
Tonight, and then let's see.
I think 7:05 on Thursday too.
Yep, you're right. Yep,
now see, that's when the rain's going to be happening though.
You're right. Yeah, we'll see.
We're supposed to be getting some rain on Thursday, so. All right, well, see if we can get those
games.
They've
got another one Friday, too, at home. So, what you know, if they're probably going to want to play it Thursday, right? I don't know.
Yeah, it'll be tough, though. But, I mean, because they're saying that some of the storms might be severe on Thursday.
Yeah, and the wind, you know. The wind, yeah. Really breezy, too. I don't know. Maybe it'll be blowing out of Wrigley and we'll have
There you go. Just think about it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Positivity.
Yeah, that's positivity. How you got it. You got to twist it, man. You got to twist it into positivity. So, anyway, once again, I want to thank everybody for coming out to my film club last night. It was really terrific to see the man who knew too much on the big screen. I will say this though, that I have had since the movie ended at like 10:15 last night, I've had Que Sera Sera just repeating on a loop in my brain.
I mean, it's a great song.
It's just that I've had it, like, it's been in my case, sirrah, sirrah, whatever will be. It's just been going through a loop in my head.
Has anyone ever told you sound just like Doris Day?
Yeah, all the time. I get that all the time. Yeah. So, Doris Day is so good in that movie. And it's such an unlikely performance from her, because it's a pretty heavy, very dramatic performance. She breaks down a bunch of times in it. And she was best known, you know, for being, you know, a comedian doing comedy stuff and singing and stuff like that. And she had some acting chops on her, man. She's really good in that movie. She and Jimmy Stewart together, really great stuff. So, yeah, that was fun. All right. There is a TV show. Excuse me. Jeez. There is a TV show that debuted last night on FX called Fosse Verdon, and I've not been this excited about a TV show in a really, really long time. It's the new FX series. It premiered last night. I'm watching it immediately when I get home in the morning after work here. And it is about the professional and romantic relationship between the great Bob Fosse and the great Gwen Verdon. You know, their professional relationship, their personal relationship, the ups and downs, the dealing with who was Bob Fosse, very complicated dude to deal with. And that's, you know, I'm being kind, but, you know, you can't argue with the two leads, you know, I mean, for FX to nab Sam Rockwell to play Bob Fosse and Michelle Williams to play Gwen Verdon, that's insane. So I have this stuff from the New York Times, actually, put together like a list of some of the great stuff that you can find online, great performances between the two of them or moments between them in their career that have been captured on film or on video. They're either from movies or from stage or from television. And they had an incredible chemistry and obviously a very volatile relationship personally. And that's all going to be dramatized on the FX series, which had its premiere last night. And it runs every Tuesday night at 9 o'clock on FX. And I've not seen it yet. I've not watched it yet. If anybody's watched it, no spoilers, but did you guys like it? 312-981-7200. No spoilers, but just tell me yay or nay on whether it's good or not, because I'm just beyond excited because I love Bob Fosse. I love Gwen Verdon. And I love Sam Rockwell. I love Michelle Williams. So I think it's going to be great. So, but we have this. I'm going to give you guys a little some stuff that you can find online or you can rent where you can see just how incredible their working relationship was and their chemistry and some of the things that they did together in show business. So, and that's a rabbit hole that you can go down if you care to. So we'll talk a little bit about that coming up here on 720 WGN. And then after the news, Kevin Powell will join us. And we will talk sports. So stay tuned for all of that. Again, 312-981-7200. Talk, text, and Wildcard Wednesday requests. Yeah! So that's any artist, any song, anything. Okay. Make Sundays your official night to tour the city. Watch Chicago's Best at 10 p.m. and then stick around for the latest in shopping, entertainment, and events on See Chicago at 10:30 p.m. on WGN-TV.
Whatever Lola wants, Lola gets. Lola wants you. Make up your mind to have.
Ah, yes.
No regrets.
Recline. Gwen Verdon from Damn Yankees. And I'm going to tell you about some of the highlights of their career. According to the New York Times, this article is from the New York Times. It's nytimes.com. And if you go to the website, they actually have clips attached to each entry telling you, you know, what these highlights are, the incredible partner and relationship between Bob Fosse and Gwen Verdon. And the reason why I'm giving you these, telling you about these highlights is because last night FX premiered Fosse Verdon, which is a TV show that I can't believe how excited I am about watching. You know, I love both Bob Fosse and Gwen Verdon a lot. And the two people that are playing the lead, Sam Rockwell and Michelle Williams, are two of the best actors on the planet. So I'm very excited to watch it. And immediately when I get home this morning after work, I'm gonna turn it on. If you guys watched it last night, no spoilers, no spoilers at all. But let me know if you thought it was good. 312-981-7200, the FX show, Fosse Verdon. 312-981-7200, talk or text. We got a really nice text here from Sue. Sue said, my grandfather and I had a great time last night and seeing the Man Who Knew Too Much and seeing it on the big screen. It was also really cool to meet your parents, and your dad told us a joke. Yeah. My parents come every month to see the movies at the film club screenings, and we have a great time. My people come up to my dad all the time at the screenings and talk to him. And then he ends up usually telling them at least one joke or perhaps sometimes doing an entire routine. So, so here's this article from the New York Times. I'll throw a few, suggestions at you from the New York Times here, what to watch and to see some of these incredible highlights from this incredible partnership between, Bob Fosse and Gwen Verdon. The dynamic professional and romantic relationship between Bob Fosse and Gwen Verdon has been dramatized in Fosse Verdon, FX series that had its premiere on Tuesday, starring Sam Rockwell and Michelle Williams. It might just leave you scrambling to revisit or discover for the first time the brilliance of their work on screen, the exuberance, the precision, the sex, the often droll humor. Fosse and Verdon collaborated across multiple entertainment mediums, so there are plenty of pieces to choose from, and here are some of the best. Mexican Breakfast from the Ed Sullivan Show in 1969. You can stream it on Vimeo. Many of the moves in Single Ladies Put a Ring on It bear a very striking resemblance to this number, which Verdon and two dancers performed on the Ed Sullivan Show. The highlights are the casual head bobs, the high kicks, which are so many and done with such ease. But Beyonce isn't the only huge pop star to have borrowed from Fosse. A Snake in the Grass, from The Little Prince, 1974. In a rare later-in-life on-screen performance, Fosse played the snake in this musical adaptation of the French pseudo-children's novella. And I've seen this, too, and it's pretty amazing, because he pretty much just went, at this point in his career, in 1974, he was not in front of the camera or not on stage dancing. I mean, he was still obviously choreographing and now moved on to directing. That was his main focus. So it was really interesting to see, at this point in his career, to get back in front of the, you know, get back in front of the camera and do his thing. His neck isolation, soft shoe footwork, and all black ensemble are an obvious inspiration for Michael Jackson's signature moves, which had been noted, has been noted for years. And he truly had a thing for hats. Who's Got the Pain from Damn Yankees, 1958. More Hats, a song about doing the mambo and feeling sick. The lyrics are nonsensical, but the rare image of Fosse and Verdon dancing together on screen is unbelievably irresistible. The furious footwork is a pure joy. But the real highlight of Damn Yankees is definitely what we just heard, Whatever Lola Wants, a striptease that's as weird as it is sexy and maybe even more so. But that's why it works. Verdon is completely game to lean hard into the plainful nature of the old-school burlesque as filtered through Fosse's precise choreography. The highlights include Verdon's signature nasally vocals, which are as expressive as her moves. There are manic cartoon baby steps during the break. That's another highlight that you can check out. Let's see. Okay, well, we got a text here from the 773 area code. Loved Fosse Verdon. They pulled no punches. They pulled zero punches from the start. I can't wait to watch this, man. Can't we just move ahead to 5 a.m.?
Throw on a little Fosse Verdon for the morning?
Yeah, man.
Get your All Brand.
I am so excited.
Get your cup of coffee.
I am so excited. Oh, my God.
I mean, in terms of influential choreographers.
Come on now.
It's basically, I can think of maybe Fred Astaire ahead of Fosse.
You know,
but, I mean, that's
Twyla Tharp is Twyla Tharp's way up there, too. Mm-hmm. But not only a great choreographer, but an unbelievable filmmaker, a really great director.
And I know your dad hated all that jazz.
Hated all that jazz.
But it's so good.
Oh, I know. He hated it. And I showed that at my film club a couple of years ago, and my dad came.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, the first time we saw it back in 1979 when it came out, I told you this story before, he kept leaving to smoke because he couldn't take it. And when we walked outside, when people waiting in line to see it, he was like, man, I couldn't wait for that guy to die.
Yeah.
And he truly didn't mean to ruin the experience for anybody waiting in line, but he hated the movie so much. And then when he came a couple of years ago to the screening again, when I was doing the Q&A afterwards, I asked my dad directly in front of the entire crowd. I was like, did you like it this time? He says, no, I hated it. We were talking about this show. I was telling my parents how excited I am about the show when we were in the car on the drive down. They gave me a lift here from the from the theater, and my dad's like, what is that, Fosse Verdon? And so I told him what it was. He's like, oh god,
that guy from all that jazz.
Oh my god. I was like, yeah, Dad, you're not going to want to watch this. So the New York Times, by the way, has this. These highlights from the career between Fosse and Verdon, and it is a rabbit hole, and that's what they called it. It says down the Fosse Verdon rabbit hole. You can go to YouTube, you can go to some of these other places online, and you can just really find so many amazing things that they did together. So I cannot wait for this show. Fosse Verdon, we got one great review from a listener who texted in. It's on FX Tuesday nights at 9 o'clock. I'll let you know what I think of it tomorrow on the show. All right, we're breaking here because the news is up next, and then our good friend Kevin Powell is going to join us to talk sports.
Just one look at you, and I know it's going to be a lovely day.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. We are every weekday morning. It's a Wild Card Wednesday. You hear me? Wild Card Wednesday. That means any artist, any song, anything, get your requests in now. We'll do them a little bit later on. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We're going to be talking about some, you know, method acting, people who do the method acting. Sometimes it goes way too far. And I've got some examples of actors and actresses who do the method thing and went too far. And it's just downright scary or weird. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text anytime you want to get in here. You can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected on our Facebook page at facebook.com/NickDShow. All right, you heard Bill Withers, and that means only one thing. It's time to talk with Kevin Powell. Kevin Powell does the sports for the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis every weekday afternoon. And he's got the Powell at the Park podcast on WGN Plus, iTunes, and more. And he covers sports for us, too. We talk to him, usually once a month or once every few weeks to get his take on what's going on in the world of sports. And so let's welcome Kevin back to the show. Kevin, how are you, buddy?
Hey, Daniel Day-Lewis is one of my favorite actors. I know he goes full-blown extreme method actor, so I'm sure you've got something on Daniel Day-Lewis.
Oh, yes. Yes, we do. Yes, we do, Kevin.
I've heard some stuff about him.
He's one of the greatest actors of all time. You can name so many great performances that the guy has given over the years. But, yeah, he goes full-on method. So, yeah, we'll get to that.
Yeah, there will be blood near the top of my movie rankings, Nick. But thank you again for having me. Always great to talk to you, my man.
Very cool, man. Very cool. All right. First of all, tell everybody about Powell at the Park, the podcast, and what was your latest one?
Yeah, it's sort of picking back up now, obviously, with the start of baseball. It's predominantly baseball, but sometimes I do kind of wander off into other things that I'm interested in. But this time of year, obviously, baseball, heavy baseball. The most recent Mark Carman, who, of course, you know, and I'm sure many of the listeners know, he's works at WGN in the sports department, works for FanSided. So, and he and I just kind of talked baseball. We talked White Sox, we talked Cubs, somehow got on a Bulls rant, and I know it's over now, but we did touch on some March Madness as well. So, like I said, predominantly baseball, but I'll dabble into some other things here and there as well.
How'd your brackets do this year, Kev?
You know what? I don't get too invested into the bracket, although I'm the sports guy in the afternoon. I do watch a good amount of college basketball. But the thing with the bracket is, it's basically just people guessing.
Yeah.
It's people staring at a bracket. People have probably seen a handful of games throughout the season. It was probably a Duke or a North Carolina game. And then people just kind of look at the bracket, maybe do a little research and guess. So I think I had Virginia in the Final Four, and I think that's the only one I had hit. So my bracket was not very good, Nick, but I don't put a ton of stuff. Somebody telling you about their bracket's kind of like somebody telling you about their fantasy baseball team. It's really hard to care about it.
Right.
When you hear somebody talking about it. So, bracket though, did not go very well for me, but, I thought we had a great national championship game. That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's, I didn't watch it, but that's what I hear. I hear it was pretty unbelievable.
Yeah, overtime finish. So it was, I thought it was a pretty good tournament all around. It was fun.
All right. So, first of all, why don't we just jump into some baseball? Let's start with the Sox.
Mm-hmm.
They're already at a crossroads after their 10th game.
Yeah, it's look, they won 62 games last year. I think a lot of us were kind of projecting, maybe a 10-win jump in the 70s. Maybe they can surprise and win a few more than that. Maybe get to 500. They don't play in the toughest division in baseball, but so far the story's just been the pitching. I mean, it's four straight starts now for Sox pitchers that haven't gone five innings. So they're getting kind of beat up from the get-go with the starters, and then they got to go to the bullpen, and it always puts a lot of pressure on the bullpen. So there's been some definite positive signs. Yoan Moncada, who at one time was the top prospect in the world, basically. I mean, everybody said he was a no-miss guy. I know we've heard that a million times at baseball, but he has just about every tool imaginable for a baseball player. He's fast. He can, he's a great eye at the plate. He struggled last year. He struck out 217 times, but he's already got three homers. So far, he's just come out red hot, right out of the gate. So that's really a positive thing to see, because Yoan Moncada was the guy that came over in that Chris Sale trade. That
right.
Sort of sparked this whole rebuild. And if you're going to trade a Chris Sale, you better get something in return. And Moncada was the centerpiece of that deal, at least for the White Sox coming back. So to see him jump out, he's a guy that really matters in the long term. you know, forecasting of where this team is going to be for years to come.
What about the White Sox are keeping an eye on this Luis Robert?
Yes, his name is Luis Robert. He's a 21-year-old Cuban outfielder. They signed a couple of years ago, and he was kind of slowed by injuries last year, just some sort of unfortunate. He had a hamstring. He injured his thumb sliding into a base. Look, this guy looks like he could be the starting strong safety for the Bears. I mean, he is built. He is a tank, Nick. I'm telling you. Four homers so far. He's all the way down in single A, though. So, I don't know. Lately in baseball, we've seen guys get fast-tracked to the big league. Juan Soto on the Nationals is a name that comes to mind. They brought him up when he was 19. Ronald Acuna on the Braves. So I think they're going to be patient with him, but, man, he could not be off to. He's batting around like 500. He's got 12 RBIs in just six games now, four home runs. He projects potentially as your future center fielder for the White Sox.
Wow. And a little more White Sox news here. I guess Tim Anderson is probably the hottest player on the team right now, correct?
Yeah. You know, over the weekend, this past weekend, he had 10 hits in three games. He went three hits Friday, three hits Saturday, and four hits in Sunday's game. And, he's a 2020 guy. He had 20 homers, 20 stolen bases last year. I think the big thing for him is defensively, he had 12 throwing errors last year, which was tied for the most in the American League, I want to say.
Yeah.
But he's got all the tools. You know, he's one of those guys that can run. He's got power. He's flashy. He's a fun player to watch, all those sorts of things. So he's off to a great start as well.
All right. Well, let's move over to the Cubs here. They're kind of in the same position as the Sox right now, especially in terms of their bullpen. And now Lester is actually headed to the injured list. We didn't know quite what was going on with the hamstring on Monday at the at the opener, but now we know that he's headed to the injured list. What does that mean?
Yeah, it's not good. I mean, they're off to such a great start, and it obviously turned out to be a great result, you know, winning 10-0 in their home opener.
Sure.
But Lester was off to a great start. He was an RBI double as well. And that's really how he got hurt, was running the bases and sliding in the home, and that's when he kind of felt something weird in his left hamstring. Yeah. So, look, it doesn't sound too serious. It sounds like he'll miss his – he was supposed to start Sunday against the Angels. He's going to miss that, but he should be in line to be back by next Thursday. So I don't think it sounds like anything too serious, but obviously, you know, lingering hamstrings, they can linger. So yeah. I don't think it's anything to be too concerned about. You know, the bright spot, too, from that was obviously that was unfortunate seeing Lester get hurt. But the bullpen, which was so bad. I mean, the bullpen going into that game had like an 8.72 ERA, like that.
Yeah.
And they picked up the Cubs. They went seven innings, basically. Seven innings of no runs and just four hit balls. So
yeah, no, that was very. They stepped that up, man. Because as soon as Lester was pulled from the game, I'm like, oh boy, here we go.
I think everybody was, because they were up 6-0 at the point, and everyone's like, that lead is not safe from what we've seen so far.
Yeah.
But they had Brad Brock came in, Kinsler, Rosario, and obviously Strope was the fourth guy. And they took care of business. So we'll see. It's an early sample size so far, but look, there were some projections of the Cubs as basically being like a 500 type team, which all of us were like, really? Okay. But you know, much of the concern was about the bullpen. The thing that I have concern with when it comes to the relievers, they don't have a big power arm type guy. And it is sort of a swing and miss type league where it is guys throwing mid to high 90s with a nasty breaking ball. They really don't have that guy. I mean, Brandon Morrow sort of is that guy, but he's still hurt. He probably won't be back for another month or so. So I do have some concerns about the bullpen, although the past couple of games they've done a really good job.
So let's just talk a little bit about Javi being Javi, as we do all the time. He threw his damn bat at a ball that was thrown in the dirt, and he got an RBI single.
Yeah, I was watching the game, and when that happened, I was like, okay, I need multiple angles here. I need ultra slow motion. I'm like, what? I'm like, what did he just do? It looked like some sort of weird glitch, like you're playing a video game, and all of a sudden the ball ends up in the outfield.
Right.
Yeah, man, you know, look, the outside breaking ball is a pitch that's always sort of plagued him at the plate. It's something he really has trouble laying off of, but he's gotten better at it. And look, that shows you that he knows. He's like, I've either got to lay off that outside breaking ball or I've got to find a way to hit it. And he literally found the last possible option, which was kind of just throw the bat. The ball hit the ground, I might add. The ball hit the ground, and as it was bouncing up, it made contact with the bat that had already been released from Baez's hands and ended up in left field. It was just, it's just Baez, right? It's absolutely crazy. Javi being Javi,
and he got an RBI. It's just, it's crazy. All right, Kevin, hang on, okay, man?
You got it.
All right, Kevin Powell is with us. You can listen to him on the Rokan show with Ana de Volantes every weekday afternoon. You can follow him on Twitter at kpowell720 and get his Powell at the podcast, Powell at the Park podcast as well. All right, we'll take a quick break. More sports talk with Kevin after this on WGN. Lean on me when you're not strong, and I'll be your more Bill Withers. That, of course, means that Kevin Powell is with us. You can follow him on Twitter at kpowell720 and check out his Powell at the Park podcast at WGN Plus, iTunes, more, and right here at WGNRadio.com. And every day you can listen to him every weekday on the Rokan Show with Ana de Volantes, covering the world of sports. And he talks with us every few weeks. We always love to have Kevin on to talk sports. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. And it's Wild Card Wednesday. You be Wild Card Wednesday. That's any artist, any song, any thin, 312-981-7200. Get those requested now. And let's welcome Kevin back. Kevin, welcome back.
Thanks, Nick. Always love talking to you, my man.
Yeah. All right, so before we move on to something else here, we want to cover the whole Joe Maddon future thing with the Cubs. You know, people have been questioning it now since the start here of this season you know, kind of since the end of last season. Theo Epstein talked a little bit about it, but he didn't make anything clearer. And his future, Joe Maddon's future with the Cubs seems a little murky. What's the latest?
Yeah, the only thing that seems clear is that there's no certainty Joe Maddon's going to be back next season. And the Cubs haven't hidden that point from anybody. It's not like they've really put a ton of pressure on Maddon publicly, but they also sort of haven't assured him of any long-term future here. You know, the Joe Maddon thing is so interesting to me because, and we might have talked about this last time I was on, Nick, but if you and I were talking 5 years ago, 10 years ago, and we were just kind of fantasizing about the idea of the Cubs winning the World Series, a part of that conversation would have been, man, whoever the manager is that leads them to a World Series is going to have a lifetime pass in this city.
Yeah, right.
Right? Right? You know what I mean? Like that if the manager who led the Cubs to the World Series, you would figure, I mean, he's going to have a statue outside Wrigley. The guy could basically stay there forever. Doesn't really feel that way right now at all. It's really kind of an interesting dynamic with Maddon. And I think if they miss the playoffs, I don't think he'll be back next year. Mm-hmm. I think that's a legitimate case. I think there is, you know, hot seat is what we like to throw around when it comes to job security and lack of job security when it comes to coaches in all sports. And I think he is on the hot seat. I really do. There's a ton of talent on this team, and Theo Epstein and Joe Maddon have said it themselves that there is a shelf life to a lot of positions in sports, one of them being a manager in baseball.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, just a couple short years ago, Maddon, like, couldn't do anything wrong. I mean, I realize some fans are still mad at him about the way he handled the bullpen during the World Series run, yeah, and even over the past couple years. I get that, but it just doesn't feel like he has a ton of job security right now to me, which is just, again, kind of crazy to think, considering just a few years ago they were hoisting the commissioner's trophy over their heads in Cleveland, yeah. So... I think he's definitely on the hot seat, though. I think that's a real thing.
I can tell you this, you know, my dad is the biggest Cub fan in the world. He's calling for his head.
Yeah, you know what? There are a lot of Cub fans that are like that. That, like, I'll be watching a game and Maddon makes a move, and I get texts from buddies like, what is he doing? You know, I think one of the things with Maddon is that he's very calculated when it comes to playing matchups. That's what he loves and he always talks about. So a guy will go out and get three or four hits in a game, but he was a righty and there was a lefty on the mound, and the next day there's a righty on the mound, and Madden elects to have a lefty in his spot. It drives people insane. It's like, why would you do that? But he just continues to stick with that idea, for better or worse, that he's just going to play matchups. And honestly, that is the beauty of the Cubs lineup. Like, I think the Cubs might have the best offense in the National League. I mean, it is loaded top to bottom. And I think you should probably give some of the credit to Madden for playing the proper matchups. I know people scream for Almora to play more,
right.
Kyle Schwarber to play more, and all those sorts of things, but the offense has been really good, so obviously Madden's doing something right with the lineup, but I do understand the frustration from fans from a certain standpoint.
Yeah, okay. Well, my dad's a little hot-headed. My dad, and I've said this before, my dad, let's just say it's late September, the Cubs are 20 games under 500, which has been a reality. My dad will still sit on the edge of the on the edge of his seat yelling at the TV as if it were a playoff game, and like I said, 20 games under 500 late September, he's there every pitch.
I respect the passion.
Yeah.
I mean, I really do. Yeah.
Let's talk a little Bulls here. Now, you know, everybody's been talking about how this season has just been a nightmare for the most part. You know, what's insane is that I'm looking at this stat. One of the reasons why the Bulls have struggled this season, and this is a real stat, that players have missed 276 games.
76. I had the digits wrong.
276 games due to injury or illness.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. It was pretty unbelievable. It's watching the Bulls this year was tough.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really tough. They were not good at all. And yeah, I mean, much of it has to do with that reason. Zach LaVine missed time. Lauri Markkanen was shut down. The list goes on and on and on here. You know, it's funny because Ro and I have been talking about the Bulls over the past couple of days and just trying to kind of find some silver lining or some sort of light at the end of the tunnel with them. And I guess what I will say about the Cubs is the Bulls is this, that you have Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, Otto Porter Jr., who they traded for, actually turned out to be a really nice fit into the Bulls system.
Yeah.
Now, those are a few core guys that you can probably build around. And if you add a superstar to the mix, okay, they're kind of cooking, maybe. I think they can get something going. The big thing here, and I'm sure you're going to ask me the Blackhawks. Blackhawks got very lucky last night in the draft lottery, and they somehow landed a third pick in the draft. That's huge. We thought they were going to have the 10th, 11th, or 12th pick. Now, the Bulls have the fourth best odds, is the way I'm going to put it, because the draft lottery thing can get kind of weird and technical, but they have the fourth best odds to land the top pick in the draft. I'll put it that way. Mm. Now, remember, the Bulls got lucky when it came to Derrick Rose. Derrick Rose, they had like a 1% chance to land the top overall pick in the draft, and they did. They got lucky, and they got an MVP-type player. There's a player, Zion Williamson, who I'm sure you've heard the name, Nick. He was the star at Duke. It looks like Khalil Mack playing basketball out there. The guy is absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah.
If the Bulls land the top pick in the draft lottery next month, I mean, that changes everything because Zion Williamson is already an international superstar. I'm not overselling it. I'm telling you, this guy is unbelievable, and he's a player like we haven't seen. I don't know if that's the right way of saying it, but he's the best college player we've seen in a long, long time. So if the Bulls somehow land the top pick and you add Zion Williamson to Zach LaVine and Markkanen and Paul Porter Jr., Bulls just became one of the most interesting teams in the NBA. I'm telling you that right now. So there's a lot at stake in the NBA draft lottery next month. If they don't, there's still some other good pieces. But, you know, it's basketball. It's very much a star-driven league. You got to have superstars, like super, superstars, the LeBron James types, the Steph Curry types, you know, players that can really help carry your team. And Zion Williamson, I think everybody thinks, can be one of these superstar players. The Bulls somehow, everybody cross their fingers, they can land the top pick in the draft this summer and get Zion Williamson. You know, I think things get a whole lot more interesting.
Let's jump into some Bears stuff here. They announced their the preseason opponents for 2019. Yeah. What's that looking like?
Yeah, you know, it's preseason, so it's preseason, but they'll start the season, they host Carolina, and then they have two on the road at the Giants, at Indianapolis, and then they wrap things up against Tennessee at Soldier Field in late August. Look, I haven't been this excited about an upcoming Bears season in a long time, Nick. I mean, you go from worst to first, 12-4, you're looking at a defense that's probably the best in football. Mitch Trubisky showed a lot of signs that he can be a long-term quarterback. You know, they made some additions on the offensive side of the ball with Cordarrelle Patterson, who's a guy who can play receiver, running back, kick returner, just about everything. So a lot of good things cooking for the Bears right now, and I think a lot of people are excited. So basically any Bears news, I think, gets all Bears fans excited. And Zach Miller, who, you know, he may remember that gruesome knee injury he suffered a couple seasons ago. Still recovering from that. He received the Ed Block Courage Award. He was honored yesterday afternoon. That's voted on by Bears teammates. But basically just sort of highlights a guy who has you know, sportsmanship, hard work, good teammate, all those sorts of things. So that was good to see for him, because that was one of the nastiest sports injuries I've seen. But I think there's a lot of really good things cooking for the Bears, and they still can add in the draft later this month.
Yeah, so. I know the draft is coming up, and I know that that could be an interesting thing to happen with the Bears. I will say this. We're starting to get enough time has passed in between how that season ended and looking forward, you know what I mean? I know it stings, and it was one of the most devastating ways to end a season ever. You know, time has passed, and I think people are starting to get excited. I know my Bears fan friends are really looking forward to this season. And it's, you know, in retrospect, last season was great. All right, Kevin. Thanks, man. Always great to talk to you. Everybody should listen to Kevin Powell on the Roll Count Show with Anna DeVlantis every weekday afternoon. Follow him on Twitter at kpowell720 and check out the Powell at the Park podcast. Kevin, always a great pleasure to talk to you, buddy. Have a good one.
Hey, you're the best, Nick. I'm going to go listen to some Bill Withers.
All right, buddy. Take care, Kevin Powell. Everybody, listen to him on the Roll Count Show where he does the sports every afternoon, weekday afternoon, right here on 720 WGN. Okay, take a break. The news is coming up next. All right. Wild Card Wednesday starts off. Yeah, man, Wild Card Wednesday. It's your request. It's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200 for your requests. That was Take Me Out to the Ball Game, but what?
Right. So it's from the theme from The Natural.
Okay.
So, but that's just an early part of the whole theme.
Of The Natural.
Yeah, it goes into Take Me Out to the Ball Game.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
From the movie The Natural.
Starring Robert Redford.
Right. Who requested that?
That was Paul in Maryland.
Okay.
I decided to pick out the strangest part where it starts out. You think it's going to be some sort of orchestral score, and then boom.
Right. I remember the score for The Natural. If I'm not mistaken, Randy Newman wrote it. I hated that movie.
Not a fan of The Natural.
No, because I read the book, and it is so far from what the book was. Mm-hmm. The book was really, really dark, and the movie was not. And, I hated that movie. So, all right. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. Again, a Wild Card Wednesday.
Yeah!
So you can get your requests in now. Any artist, any song, anything, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. All righty then. A little bit later on, we are going to talk about some food combinations that definitely shouldn't exist. And then we have all been doing some common things wrong, and we'll tell you about that. But right now, I found this pretty crazy article detailing when method acting goes too far. And we all know what the method is. The method acting, it's a technique, they say here, that separates good actors from all-time greats. This training means going beyond portraying the character in an attempt to literally become them. These committed actors sacrifice their mind, their body, and their spirit to transform into the characters that we will never forget. And a lot of the method acting started, I want to say it started like in the, you know, in the 50s. Brando being one of the first ones to do it, James Dean being one of the first ones to do it. And a lot of the things are like they transform themselves. If you're doing method work, they transform themselves physically if they need to. They stay in character. A lot of the actors and actresses stay in character. Some go so far as to not answer to their real name and only answer to their character name. A lot of their behavior off screen when they're not shooting is altered, and it affects their relationships and it affects the coworkers. It's a method that, you know, many times results in a great performance. There's no question about it. And the first story here is from the actor that Kevin mentioned, and that, of course, is Daniel Day-Lewis, who is a great practitioner of the method, of the method acting style. And here's the story. This is at Collider.com. This is a really terrific little article, which has, you know, great pictures of the actors accompanying it. It's at Collider.com, but we have a link on our Facebook page right to it, so you can see the entire article with the stories and the pictures and all that stuff. And it's at Facebook.com/Nick D Show. So like us right now, go to Facebook.com/Nick D Show, and you can see the article yourself. And if you guys have any, you know, like method acting, favorite method acting performances, give us a call at 312-981-7200 or text us 312-981-7200 for some method acting performances that you like or method acting stories. So Daniel Day-Lewis is, they say here, the crowned king of modern day method acting. The list of life-altering experiments Daniel Day-Lewis has undergone in order to relate to his characters is as long as the list of characters themselves. The now retired Irish actor, yeah, so he, you know, retired after Phantom Thread, which is such a great movie. You've seen Phantom Thread, right?
Yeah, big fan.
Oh, man.
I mean, P.T. Anderson.
Well, he's my favorite.
He just turns out.
He's just, he's the best. And, I thought that was his best movie in a while. I mean, I thought the Master was great. Inherent Vice, I like a lot, but that's the only movie that he's directed that I have some issues with. It's really kind of all over the map, and you know, like it seemed like after There Will Be Blood, he kind of dropped any notion of a normal narrative, like not even telling a story. The Master is a very challenging movie, and so is Inherent Vice.
Well, especially because the latter is a Thomas Pynchon novel,
right?
And that guy does not care about straightforward storytelling.
Yeah, but anyway, in Phantom Thread, he was great, and if it was indeed his last performance, that's too bad because he's one of the best actors of all time. So here, the now retired Irish actor caught pneumonia on the set of Martin Scorsese's Gangs of New York. Even between takes, Bill the Butcher wouldn't have worn an insulated coat in the 19th century. So he stayed in character to the point where even between takes, he would not warm himself up, so he caught pneumonia. Other examples of the actor's adherence to the method include not bathing for the entirety of The Crucible. That must have been pleasant. Spending nights locked in solitary confinement while shooting In the Name of the Father. Only eating food that he could catch and kill himself for The Last of the Mohicans. And going around in a wheelchair demanding to be spoon-fed for my left foot.
I mean, as much... I mean, they're great performances, but yeah. I just feel bad for the people around him.
Yeah,
because they're just gonna, you know, he did the same thing on Lincoln, right? Yeah, he would go around call me Mr. Lincoln.
Yeah, no, he does it all the time. And you know, for you know, if you've got actors who don't apply the method acting technique, they're like, what the hell is wrong with this guy?
Yeah,
that's like you know the classic story of Dustin Hoffman working with Laurence Olivier on Marathon Man. Do you know this story?
Yeah.
Where, you know, in order to appear haggard and out of it and crazy, Dustin Hoffman, who was a method guy, stayed up for like 4 days straight and didn't sleep and didn't eat. And Laurence Olivier, you know, Laurence Olivier, who obviously was widely considered perhaps the greatest actor of all time, at least at that time period, even though he was in The Jazz Singer and Boys from Brazil. He shows up on the set, Dustin Hoffman shows up on the set just like a wreck, you know? And they had like an exchange or something. And in between takes, Laurence Olivier says, my dear boy, why don't you try acting? Because he was not a method actor.
No.
And he found the whole thing to be just ridiculous. My dear boy, why don't you try acting?
I think there's an argument for that, though, where it's like, yeah, it's easy to act delirious when you physically make yourself delirious.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of the point of the method thing.
Right.
It's like you want to get into it. You want to actually
feel it.
Kate Winslet. Historically, method acting is usually considered a total sausage fest. You think of Brando, you think of Bale, you think of Day-Lewis, who not only transform their bodies without fear of public backlash, but engage in all manner of dangerous stunts to fully plunge into the role. But then there's Kate Winslet. After portraying a Nazi concentration camp for the 2008 The Reader, Winslet admitted that it took her months to recover from the role. She's quoted as saying, it's like I've escaped from a serious car accident and need to understand what just happened, she said about the experience. Luckily, her then husband, director Sam Mendes, had to help her to readjust. Yeah. I love that. And by the way, if you have any favorite method performances or any of these stories ring true or certainly intense, crazy acting performances that you love, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. I love that Sam Mendes made Revolutionary Road. I think that's a terrific movie, and I really, really like that movie a lot. And I think DiCaprio and Winslet are both great in it. And I also Michael Shannon is amazing in it. But I loved that Mendes cast DiCaprio and Winslet, who are considered to be in one of the greatest love stories of all time, and they have this on-screen chemistry, and they have this wonderful relationship until she wouldn't move over on the damn door to let him let him get on, so he drowned.
That's real method acting right
there. It's like, there's plenty of room on the door. Plenty of room on the door, Rose. Move over and let Jack get on that.
I wonder if she asked Jim Cameron.
So,
maybe he can get on here.
Yeah. So anyway, one of the things I love about it, I think the casting is fantastic. I love the fact that they was like, here's a, you know, this, these two actors that had great chemistry starting this very romantic, unapologetically romantic movie, Titanic, a love story that many young women adore, and then they cast them in this movie where they hate each other. I also love the fact that the movie starts when they first meet across the room from each other at a party, and there's that great, wonderful spark. And it's their first night where they meet, and there's a lot of chemistry, and they're really loving each other, and they're being very lovely to each other. And then you smash cut to years later when they're married already, they're in a car, and they're having one of the worst arguments ever, and they clearly hate each other.
That's real life, baby.
It's absolutely.
When the love is gone.
Absolutely, man. So, and I also love the fact that Sam Mendes followed that movie with what I think is by far his best movie, and that's Away We Go. With John Krasinski and Maya Rudolph, written by Dave Eggers and his wife. But I love that he had to follow it up with that. That was his follow up movie after he did Revolutionary Road, which is just this bitter, angry movie about the end of this relationship that has just gone so incredibly sour, and it's such a bitter, angry movie, and these two people hate each other, and it ends on such a sad, sad tragedy that he had to follow it up with Away We Go, which is just one of the most beautiful movies and one of my favorite movies. Easily Sam Mendes' best movie. Without even a question, it's his best movie.
Do you want to get in the stroller, Wolfie?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. You are a horrible person. I love that movie.
Oh, it's adorable.
And the two of them, Maya Rudolph and Krasinski, it's such a beautiful movie. It's such a lovely film. And that ending makes me cry every single time I watch it. I bawl my eyes out during the last 5 minutes of that movie. And all of the supporting roles in it, I mean, my God, you know, you got Maggie Gyllenhaal. Allison Janney is unbelievable in it. And yeah, it's just it's a great movie. But it was like Sam Mendes is quoted as saying, I needed to make this movie after making Revolutionary Road.
Oh, I don't doubt it.
And you know, because it's just such the polar opposite of Revolutionary Road. And also, I believe at the time he was going through his divorce with Kate Winslet. And he's like, I got to do something positive. I have to make a movie about a really sweet and wonderful and believable relationship, you know. So it's such a great movie. If you've not seen Away We Go, everybody, I can't recommend it highly enough. I really, really can't.
I think that's one really for both John Krasinski and Maya Rudolph. They stepped into a whole different caliber.
No, there's no question about it. There's no question about it. And it's funny, too. It's a very funny movie.
Oh, absolutely.
But yeah. There's some real serious stuff in it, some really great stuff. And again, man, I wept at the end of that movie. I just wept. It's just such a beautiful movie. All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back here. We're talking when method acting gets out of hand. And there's a lot of evidence as to why the method sometimes is crazy. So we'll get to that. And if you want to jump in with some of your favorite sort of method performances or intense performances, 312-981-7200. Tonight, turn on the lights and unleash the bats. It's Cubs Pirates in prime time at Wrigley tonight at 7 on WGN-TV Sports.
Do the hammer lock. I do the hammer lock. Do the hammer lock, you turkey necks. Yeah, do the hammer lock. I do the hammer lock. Everybody's doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, I can tell there's a residual WrestleMania in the air right there. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here on a Wednesday morning. It's Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah! 312-981-7200. Tell everybody who that was and who requested it.
So that was the Novas with the Crusher coming from the 773.
All right.
Gets you in the mood.
Yeah. Oh, boy. You know, it was the longest WrestleMania of all time on Sunday.
How long was it?
About 7 hours.
What?
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm not going to pretend like I'm a major wrestling fan, but I like wrestling, but I don't know, 7 hours?
Yeah, yeah. I didn't watch it. My parents are big wrestling fans. I've been a wrestling fan my whole life.
Right, right.
And but I did watch, you always have to watch, this is a rule. If you, even if you don't watch WrestleMania, you always have to watch the post WrestleMania Raw. Always have to watch it because it's always insane, and it was insane because the crowd is out of their minds and they go nuts, and it's from people from all around the world who have traveled to the location to see WrestleMania. They stay the whole weekend, and the Monday Night Raw after WrestleMania is always great and insane. And this, and I watched it the other morning, and it indeed was.
I got to catch up.
Indeed was insane.
I'm behind.
So, all right. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Hey, speaking of method acting, we were just talking wrestling. but no, we're talking about method acting. You know, that famous technique where actors and actresses, it's usually actors, they stay in character, they gain a bunch of weight, they alter their personality. They do really intense and crazy and extreme things in order to get that performance and get into the character. And we're talking about sometimes when the method acting goes a little too far and some of the most impressive and intense or best method acting performances. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. 815 area code text. And Christian Bale. Christian Bale's performance in The Fighter as Dickie Eklund is one of the first that comes to mind as an amazing method acting performance. He's another dude. Christian Bale's another dude who goes to extremes. You see The Machinist?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's disturbing just looking at him.
No, it's a great performance. It's a great performance.
But
he's a great actor. Christian Bale, he is a great actor. Mm-hmm. I got to say, you know, one of my favorite Christian Bale performances, and there are so many of them, but it's not one that gets as much sort of recognition as it deserves. I mean, he just put on a bunch of weight to play Dick Cheney. So that was another thing. I mean, he was under makeup and stuff, but he did put on a bunch of weight. So he does do that pretty much to varying degrees in every movie that he makes. But absolutely loved him in American Hustle, which is a movie that I adore. I love, and I think all the performances in that movie. Jennifer Lawrence is hilarious in that movie. But he is particular. I don't know what it is about. Maybe it's the hair. I don't know. I'm not really sure. He gained weight for that movie too. But his performance in that movie, for some reason, like really, it's one of my favorite Christian Bale performances. He also gave one of the, without question, one of the greatest child performances of all time in Empire of the Sun. I mean, insane, insane. And I remember the first time I saw Empire of the Sun. Immediately, about half an hour into the movie, I'm like, who the hell is this kid? Where did Spielberg find this kid? It's one of the best child performances I've ever seen, and he's only gotten better as he's gotten. He's one of the best actors on the planet, and he does that method stuff. Again, I mentioned The Machinist. Man. And that's actually in this article, because you can't...
You can't mention method acting.
Without talking about Christian Bale in one hand, and of course The Machinist, which is the most extreme physical changeover I've ever seen an actor do. Absolutely insane. All right, here's Ike on WGN. Go ahead, Ike.
Hey, Nick, how's it going with you, man?
All right.
I have two stories of method acting that I kind of liked. Of course, the first one is classic, Marlon Brando in The Godfather.
Yeah.
When he put the cotton balls in his mouth, he really got into it, into roles, man. No one could do it like him, especially in The Godfather.
Yeah, but by that point, he had gotten, you know, he did the method thing, but he was also very lazy because every one of his lines was written down so that he could see it off camera. He didn't even memorize his lines for The Godfather, and he got an Oscar for it.
of course, with Apocalypse Now, he did the same thing with Apocalypse
Now.
Yeah,
by that point, he just didn't care. By that point, you know, he showed up on set 50 pounds fatter than he was supposed to be. Because Kurtz is supposed to be this built, svelte guy, and he shows up and he's like 300 pounds, and Coppola's like, "Oh my god,
brilliant but lazy."
Yeah. So,
and okay, the second one, and you're not alone when it comes to this movie. I think it's overrated as well, but I do give credit to the actor Heath Ledger, The Dark Knight, playing the Joker.
Yeah, that was a method performance, absolutely a method performance, and that's actually talked about in this article. We're going to get to that one in a little bit. All right, Ike, thanks, buddy.
No problem.
All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. We are talking about when method acting goes too far and some of the weirdest or best method acting performances of all time. 312-981-7200. We'll back to that after the news. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio on a Wednesday morning, Wildcard Wednesday. You mean Wildcard Wednesday? As any artist, any song, anything, get your requests in now. 312-981-7200. Tell everybody what that was and who requested that.
So that was Steely Dan with Midnight Cruiser, and that's coming from Paul, but not Paul from Maryland.
A different Paul. Paul, who is a Dan fan. All right, cool. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. How's it going, everybody? Nick DiGilio here. And we're going to be talking about some weird food combinations that definitely should never existed. And also, we are now talking about method acting and when method acting goes too far and some of the most intense, best, or weirdest method performances of all time. If you want to join us, talk text 312-981-7200. Next one in this article is, of course, Robert De Niro. One of the all-time greats, Robert De Niro, studied directly under both Stella Adler and Lee Strasberg, both of whom taught Stanislavski's method. For Raging Bull, De Niro sat at the feet of Jake LaMotta, the Italian middleweight boxer he portrayed. De Niro even participated in three fights in the ring himself, in addition to famously gaining over 50 pounds on his then skinny frame. In preparation for Taxi Driver, De Niro went out and worked 12-hour shifts overnight as a New York cabbie. Also very similar to what Hoffman did. He didn't sleep a lot when he made that movie. The actor also gets hung up on the smaller details of a character. He paid a dentist to grind his teeth for his role as a psychopathic stalker in Cape Fear. And it turned out to be for naught. because I hate that movie.
He spent a lot of time hanging under the bottoms of cars.
Yeah, and then speaking in tongues.
Love it.
I hate that movie.
You know what? I like it.
Oh,
I don't like it as much as the original.
Yeah, no, I just think it's I think it's easily Scorsese's worst movie. Like, I don't even think anything comes close. I don't think anything comes close.
I mean, Gangs of New York?
I like Gangs of New York.
I never got it.
The only issue I have with Gangs of New York is Cameron Diaz. That's the only issue I have.
What an accent.
Don't even get me started on that. But I think it's a good movie. I think it's solid, and I think there's a lot of good stuff. I think DiCaprio's good, obviously. Danny Day-Lewis is good. John C. Reilly. It's beautifully shot. I like Gangs of New York.
When it would show up on FX in the middle of the day, I'd sit and watch it because it was better than 90% of what was on. But
yeah. No, I'm a fan. I don't think it's great. I don't think it's one of his best movies. And I also don't think The Departed is one of his best movies either. And that's the one where he finally got the Academy Award. It won Best Picture. He finally got the Academy Award that he deserved 12 times before. And it always makes me nuts, you know. Like, the two obvious times that the movie deserved Best Picture and that he deserved Best Director, it makes me absolutely nuts. Because in 1980, Robert Redford won Best Director over him.
What was the one in 80 for?
Raging Bull.
Well, no, I mean for Redford, though.
Oh, Ordinary People. And then Ordinary People went on to win Best Picture. Now, let me just say, I love Ordinary People. I think Ordinary People is a great movie. But it's not Raging Bull.
No.
And I back Ordinary People big time. I mean, I really think it's a terrific movie. And I think, you know, Robert Redford, that was the first movie he ever directed. I think he really did a great job.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not Raging Bull.
No.
And then in 1990, which is absolutely more embarrassing, was that 1990 was Goodfellas, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And he was nominated for Best Director. And he lost to Kevin Costner, another actor, directing his first movie. And it was Dances with Wolves, which is a piece of crap. And the only good thing in Dances with Wolves is the buffalo hunt scene.
Uh-huh.
And Costner didn't direct that. Kevin Reynolds did.
Way to go, Costner.
Yeah. And Kevin Reynolds, who directed a lot of great movies, he also directed the Robin Hood movie for Kevin Costner. He also directed Waterworld, which is a movie I adore. I think Waterworld is great.
Big ups for Waterworld.
He directed Rapa Nui, Fandango, all that stuff. But Kevin Reynolds, you know, cast him in Fandango, which was one of his first movies. It was Kevin Costner's first movie. Kevin Costner wins the Academy Award for Best Director, doesn't even mention Kevin Reynolds, who directed the best sequence in the entire movie.
Ungrateful.
Yeah. So let's see. Here's Donald on WGN. Hi, Donald.
Hey, how you go? How's it going? I'm remembering Al Pacino's Scarface, which he apparently went down to Vegas and got himself some blow and got himself the accent by immersing himself in the Cuban dialect, which is very difficult. I think it's the most difficult of all dialects, unless you want to do a Desi Arnaz impression. You know?
Yeah. He's been method in a bunch of stuff. Pacino's another one of these guys. He studied under Strasberg too, and in fact cast Strasberg. Got Strasberg cast in Godfather Part II. Got him cast in Unjustice for All. But yeah, he was definitely, Pacino was a method guy for sure. No question about it.
Yeah, I know his Blind Man in The Son of a Woman is, it's very believable. I think it's maybe the most believable blind since Patty Duke in The Miracle Worker, actually.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Donald.
Mm-hmm.
Take care. Here is Glenn on WGN. Hi, Glenn.
Morning, Nick.
Hi.
Hey, I was thinking about the one that kind of put Jim Carrey over the top was Andy Kaufman, when he played Andy Kaufman.
And Man on the Moon.
I mean, that's what, when Man on the Moon, because Jim did that when he, I think that's when he started just being almost as insane as Andy Kaufman was.
Well, there's a fantastic documentary about that movie on Netflix where it's absolutely clear that something happened to Jim Carrey when they made that movie. He dove into the deep end when he made that. He's great in that movie too.
I wouldn't take anything away from him from the movie, but it was a shame because his comedy prior to that was enjoyable, and now his acting has kind of gotten in overly intense. It feels like now since that movie.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, he's done comedy since then. He's done some light stuff since then. But the last movie he made was a terrible movie, Dark Crimes. It was called?
Mm-hmm.
Awful.
Right.
Just awful. All right, Glenn, thanks.
Thank you.
Take care. Here's what one of the things that I remember when they were when they were making Man in the Moon. He stayed in character. And then he started to do the kind of stuff that Andy Kaufman did. Like, for instance, I'll never forget his appearance at the movie awards, the MTV Movie Awards, when he was dressed like a hippie and he had really long hair and he didn't break character the whole time. So he stayed as that character, and that's when they were shooting the movie. That's when they were making Man of the Moon.
So he was Jim Carrey as Andy Kaufman as...
Well, he was Jim Carrey doing Andy Kaufman bits. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like staying in character and pulling a prank that no one really understands and, you know. When they were making the movie and he was Andy Kaufman, he was. But he was even as Jim Carrey doing the kind of weird pranks, reality-bending pranks that Andy Kaufman was known for.
He was on his, a different level.
His appearance on the, if you go back and look at it, his appearance on the MTV Movie Awards for that year when he was in character, it was as like this weird, like, drunken, high, hippie dude. And he won an award. And he went up and presented the award and was, like, way in character, and they kept cutting to Courtney Love, who was laughing her ass off because, you know, Courtney Love was in Man of the Moon.
Yeah.
And worked with him and was working with him at that time and knew what kind of stuff he was doing.
Mm.
But no, that's definitely a method performance. No question about it.
So it was worth it, I guess.
Well, he's great in the movie.
He gets the performance that he wants out of it.
Yeah. He's great in the movie.
But at what cost?
It's really great. I mean, yeah. Well, you saw did you see the documentary?
I did. And people, it drove people up the wall. People were, I would have been ticked.
Yeah.
I got Jim Carrey pretending to be Andy Kaufman, like he's possessed.
Yeah.
And trying to tell me, like, trying to pull these pranks on me,
yeah.
I'd be losing it. I'd be losing my mind.
Yeah. But that's what Andy Kaufman did, man.
I know. And we love him for it.
Yeah.
But it's weird when it's someone else being Andy Kaufman, right. Not Andy Kaufman himself.
Next here in the article is Tom Hanks, another case of playing loose with body mass. Tom Hanks gained and then lost 50 pounds for Castaway. He also refused to cut his hair or bathe, leading to a nasty staph infection. For his role in The Green Mile, Hanks stayed in character as a prison guard, freaking out the book's author, Stephen King. When Hanks took King on a tour of the prison, Hanks barked at the horror scribe. King had attempted to sit down on a prop electric chair, but the actor explained that as the head guard on that wing, he couldn't be seen by his subordinates goofing off with such lethal machinery. Who would think that Tom Hanks would go... method. I know he went method physically in Castaway, and he's fantastic in Castaway.
That's one where it kind of demands.
Yeah, and he was great.
Just for believability.
He was great. And I love Tom Hanks. I think he's great.
Sure.
When I think method actor, I don't think Tom Hanks.
I wonder if he also went full method and just didn't go to the bathroom. Because I know that's like part of his thing in The Green Mile.
Right. I don't remember. I only saw The Green Mile once.
Mm-hmm.
I was not as enamored with that movie as a lot of people were. I certainly don't think it was as good as Shawshank.
No.
All right, next year is Heath Ledger. There are many legends surrounding Heath Ledger's doomed turn as the Joker in Christopher Nolan's The Dark Knight, considering the Australian actor died directly after filming. But in separating fact from fiction, it's clear that Ledger did take the role seriously, locking himself away in a London hotel for a month and scribbling out daily diary entries as the Cape Crusaders' arch nemesis. Less intense but equally noteworthy was Ledger's dedication to his craft in Brokeback Mountain. Not only did the actor manage to keep that sour, scrunched look on his face for the whole 2 months of shooting, but co-star Anne Hathaway relayed an impromptu moment in the script where Ledger was supposed to turn into an alleyway and cry into a wall. Instead, Ledger wound up and punched the brick with full force, injuring his hand in the process.
Whoa.
Yeah. Leonardo DiCaprio doing some method. We all know about the scene in Django Unchained when he breaks the glass and then is bleeding all over the place and then rubs the blood all over Kerry Washington.
Yeah, that gets cited pretty much any time you're talking about.
And I remember the first time I saw Django, I was like, I think he really cut himself because it didn't look like special effects. It looked like this guy
blood.
Really, and he did, and like he cut himself. And that's mentioned here. It says it took Leonardo DiCaprio 4 decades to win his first Academy Award, but when he did win Best Actor in The Revenant, no one could accuse him of slacking off in the role. In fact, DiCaprio an avowed vegetarian, ate raw bison, slept in an animal carcass, and withstood freezing temperatures to portray the frigid frontierman Hugh Glass. But The Revenant isn't the first time DiCaprio went all in on a performance, shocking even his co-stars while playing plantation owner Calvin Candy in Django Unchained. The actor slammed his fist so hard on a table, he shattered glass, cut his hand. Rather than stop the scene, DiCaprio powered through, even smearing some on the stunned Kerry Washington. And after the take, he received a standing ovation. It's a great moment.
It is. It sells the character. I mean, he's selling the character the whole time.
Yeah.
But it really sells it in that moment.
Yeah. Pacino gets mentioned. Old Scarface himself likes to take notes from his character's playbooks. Still in character as the incorruptible New York police officer Frank Serpico, but probably didn't do as good a job as David Burney did in the TV version. Once pulled over a truck driver and threatened to arrest him for exhaust pollution. But it was really Pacino's commitment to the role and scent of a woman that takes the cake. Throughout filming, the actor claimed to actually be blind, his character tripping over bushes that he couldn't quote-unquote see, and sending co-star Chris O'Donnell a letter after completion of photography, which read, "Although I didn't see you, I know you were great."
Hoo-ah.
And it's a terrible performance.
I never understood Scent of a Woman.
It's not a good movie.
It's got its fans, though. Some people are really big into Scent of a Woman.
And that's another one, you know, where Pacino, you know, finally gets his Oscar. He gets his, right. You know, he gets his Oscar for that, his lead Oscar for that. He was up for two Oscars that year because he was up for supporting for Glengarry that same year.
Which really should have been.
Well, which was a much better performance.
Yeah.
So
I can never get over the hoo-ah.
No, it was ridiculous. The movie was ridiculous. It was a ridiculous movie. And it was so long.
It's like 3 hours.
Oh, my
forever.
God. I remember sitting in the theater going, is this going to end? Is he going to stop screaming at some point? And is this going to end? All right, let's take a quick break. We're talking about method performances that went too far, actors that went, you know what, I'm going to be method and be nuts. And if you have any sort of great method performances that you love or weird ones, 312-981-7200. We'll talk more about that after this.
What rolls downstairs, a boner in pairs, rolls over your neighbor's dog. What's great for a snack and fits on your back, it's love, love, love. It's love, love. It's big, it's heavy, it's wood. It's long, long, it's better than that, it's good. Everyone wants a long, you're gonna love it long. Come on and get your long, everyone needs a long.
Log from Blammo.
Who requested that?
This trucker Rob.
Trucker Rob Homewood. Requested log. For people who don't know, that's a fictional toy from the fantastic and insane mind of John Kricfalusi, and that was from Ren and Stimpy.
I haven't heard that probably for, I don't know, 20 years?
No, it's been less than that for me.
Do you have it on DVD?
I have every episode of Ren and Stimpy on DVD.
The show was insane.
It was one of the greatest shows ever. And by the way, welcome back, everybody. It's Nick DiGiulio here. Coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. I still maintain that the funniest cartoon ever in the history of cartoons is Svenhoke, when Ren's idiot cousin comes over and turns out to be pretty much a fat chihuahua version of Stampy. And that's when Ren goes off to work and they mess up the house and he comes home and he's got the briefcase and the just the jacket and the tie, no pants, and the hat, and then it proceeds to come home and berate them and pretty much act like a psychotic abusive parent. And I don't know if I've laughed harder at a cartoon. I've never laughed harder at a cartoon than that. It's one of the funniest things I've ever seen. And John Kricfalusi's nuts. He's got a screw loose. There's no question about it. But his animation style is wholly original and brilliant. I think he's a genius. He's a mad genius. And I think that Ren and Stimpy was one of the greatest things that's ever happened to the world in general.
High praise.
I love it, man. Let's see. 773 Erica. We're talking about method acting and when method acting goes maybe too far. 773 Erica says, It's from the bakery guy, Dustin Hoffman in Rain Man. Yeah, I mean, I think, I have a feeling that this article, I haven't scrolled all the way through it. I have a feeling that you can't write one without Dustin Hoffman being included in Method. But I'm in the minority on Rain Man because I think it's a good movie, not a great movie. And I think the better performance is Tom Cruise. I think Tom Cruise has the more difficult performance. And I think Tom Cruise is great in that movie. It is a great performance that I think absolutely helps Dustin Hoffman be better or appear to be better in that movie.
Well, yeah, it's one of those, when you have a pair on screen, it's got to be a little bit of give and take for it to be.
Well, it's an unsung performance because, like, you know, the showy performance is Hoffman. Hoffman's got the showy performance, but like the reactions and the way that, Cruz is the character that has the arc in the movie. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? He's the one who has to change more drastically than Hoffman does. Mm-hmm. And it's a truly great performance. And I don't think Hoffman would be half as good in that movie if Cruz wasn't as great as he was in it. It's a tremendous performance. And I think really underappreciated. He didn't get nominated. He was not nominated, for that movie, which I think is just insane. But how about Johnny Depp? It's possible Johnny Depp is an extremist form of method school. The dude lives his life as if he's actually Jack Sparrow these days, but before Pirates of the Caribbean, Depp spent years studying Hunter S. Thompson to play the gonzo author in Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. Depp ended up living in Thompson's basement, reading old transcripts, and spending as much time with the legendary author as possible. Perhaps the most enlightening thing about both Thompson and Depp's state of mind at that time is that Depp slept and smoked next to barrels of gunpowder in Thompson's basement.
I mean, that's about as Hunter S. Thompson as it gets.
Yeah.
Aside from a suitcase full of drugs,
he's really good in the movie. Well, and so is Del Toro.
Awesome.
I have issues with the movie because I actually think that the movie proves, because I think that's the best you can possibly do. Because I think the book is unfilmable. I think the book is it's one of those books that you're not going to make a great. There's no way that you can make a completely great movie out of this material, and it's one of my favorite books of all time.
Yeah.
But I think Gilliam did the best he could.
Well, and if you're going to give it to someone, it's going to be Gilliam. Gilliam is kind of the guy that is just like, how can we turn this into something coherent for the screen?
Yeah.
I mean, or maybe I'm thinking of someone else. He was maybe thinking about doing Blood Meridian.
Yeah, that was him.
I think he was in contention. Well, and so was Terry Malick was thinking about
it. Here's what sucks. You know, mentioning Terry Gilliam, he's got this movie he's been working on for 20 years about Don Quixote. This has been his passion project for over 20 years. And it's only going to be shown in theaters once. Tomorrow night, it's going to be shown in theaters once. And as part of the Fathom events, they're not even giving it a proper release. They're going to show it one time as a Fathom event. I mean, this is a passion project of this guy's life. He's been trying to tell the Don Quixote story for like over 20 years. He's been trying to get this movie made. It's been like a cross to bear for this guy. And Fathom events one night in selected theaters. What are we nuts here?
Hey man, that's the biz, I guess. Now
God, is that just sucks.
Well, we could either just throw it on streaming, or we can do one night in theaters, because Terry Gilliam's the kind of guy that wants the traditional theater experience.
Of course,
100%.
Because the guy's one of the greatest filmmakers of all time.
Mm.
So, all right, let's take a break here, and we've got more method acting to go here. We're talking about when method actors and method acting goes too far, and we'll talk more about that after the news, which is next. .306 on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Who requested some Kaja Gugu?
That's how you say it? I've literally never heard of this.
You've never heard this?
No. No.
Wow.
I don't know what kind of flock of seagulls hell they crawled out of. But
that's right around the time when flock of seagulls. You've never heard Kaja Gugu? You don't know Too Shy?
No.
Wow.
That is beyond me. Although I have
Well, it was released the year you were born, so that's probably... No, you were born 10 years after that.
Yeah,
sorry,
10
you,
years
you,
after
Yeah,
this.
10 years after that.
Yeah.
Vic, he doesn't remember Kajagoogoo.
I'm That's hearing a... this develop now.
Oh, my
what
God.
Do you I'm curious. What do you think?
I mean, it's all right. The slap bass is a little bit much, but I see what they're going for.
Oh, I love Too Shy. I can see
people bopping to this.
Now,
I can't.
All right. Have you seen the movie? Oh, man. What's the movie where the kid's flying around on that? Like a big, looks like a big fluffy dog.
What, the Neverending Story?
Yeah, Neverending Story. Have you seen
yeah,
that?
Yeah,
okay, the lead singer of Kajagoogoo does the song from Neverending Story.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, now, you know, next time I watch Neverending
Story. I can't remember his name, but he, it's like the lead singer of Kajagoogoo went solo, and he did the song Neverending Story for the Neverending Story. Kamal or Kamal or something
yeah,
like that.
I'll have to look. Number one at the UK single chart for 2 weeks. Number 5 weeks at number one in Germany.
For what? For Too Shy?
For Too Shy.
It was huge, man.
It's massive.
It was huge in America too.
Yeah, number five peaked at number five.
Yeah,
that's wild.
Yeah, I can't believe you've never heard of Kajagoogoo.
What a terrifying time in American pop culture.
Oh, it was fantastic. It was fantastic. So who requested it?
That's from Dino.
All right, Dino.
Well done, Dino.
All right. Young Tom here is learning things about...
I'm terrified.
It's Kajagoogoo, man. They rule.
Did you dress like that, Nick?
I had some bad hair in the 80s. I went through every possible bit. The 80s were much worse than the 70s. People are always just saying, oh, 70s, oh my God, the clothes and people... Blah. No. 80s, worst decade for fashion, worst decade for hair. Without question. And I was guilty of all of that crap. I had spiked hair. I had a rat tail.
Oh, no.
I did all that stuff.
Oh, no.
I did all that stuff.
Nick.
Yeah, I did. Then I just said, then I just stopped and just grew my hair out.
There you go.
And I had like.
Did a grunge phase?
Well, yeah. I mean, I started growing my hair out. I stopped being 80s. I stopped doing 80s stuff like right around 87 or 88. And then I just stopped and just didn't care and let my hair grow. And then, so yeah, by the early 90s, I was the epitome of grunge at that point. I had hair down in the middle of my back. I wore flannels, baseball caps backwards, the whole nine. And I had really long hair for a really long time. Yeah. So anyway, but Kajagoogoo, they rule.
All right.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. We're talking about method acting. And I got a couple of texts here. And if you want to jump in, 312-981-7200-847 says, good morning. What about Edward Norton? His performance in Primal Fear was stunning. Yeah, it was. And another stunning thing about that was his first movie. Like right out of the gate. And you know that Alan Rickman's first movie was Die Hard, right?
Yep.
First movie. He's Hans Gruber. I mean, what do you do after that? Well, he did tons of stuff after that.
Yeah.
Tons of great stuff after that.
You be the best part of Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
The only good part of Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, and he was Snape, for God's sake.
Yeah,
he was a great actor. Sorely
God, miss him. Yeah,
but it's, I mean, every time I think about the fact that Alan Rickman's first movie was Die Hard, I just go, what? Because not only is he phenomenal in it. But it's one of the most iconic villains in the history of movies.
Oh, no question.
And like right out of the gate, that's your first movie?
Mm-hmm. And then you got Edward Norton going toe-to-toe. Richard Gere.
He was great in Primal Fear. It's a great performance. And that's one of those movies that has that twist at the end that I did not see coming at all.
Love a good twist.
But Edward Norton is a real pain in the ass to work with. You ask any other actor, ask directors.
Yeah.
He's a real pain in the neck to work with. He's phenomenal in American History X,
mm-hmm.
but a nightmare as a, you know, like he took over. He tried to take over the movie. He's done that a bunch of times. He even did it on Hulk. He even did it on his version of Hulk.
I wonder what the set of Fight Club must have been like.
It was a nightmare. Have you read about any of this stuff?
Yeah, I've read a little bit about Fight Club, and I've been reading that book about 1999.
Yeah.
Best movie year ever. And I know David Fincher is such a perfectionist. Like,
yeah.
I know some people who've worked just lighting for him on Mindhunter.
Mm-hmm.
And he's an amazing, amazing artist.
Well,
but holy cow.
You know how many takes they did in the opening scene? How many takes they did in the opening scene of Social Network, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they did like 150 takes. And that's nothing but talking. That's two people sitting at a table talking. And he did like 150 takes.
And that's how you get top five movie of the decade.
Yeah. It's a great movie. He's a great director. I'd end up trying to punch him in the face if he said, let's do it one more time. We just did 149 takes. You seriously want another one?
Method directing.
Yeah. 708 area code said Sean Penn went method for Fast Times. He did indeed. But he's another one that goes method all the time. But apparently he was a real nightmare on Carlito's Way. He was like, and he did, and that was his hair. That wasn't a wig. Like, he did that. He had to walk around 24 hours a day with that hair in Carlito's Way. That's
commitment. That's craft.
Yeah. That's the thing. What was it? Somebody told me, an actor that I know who I worked with a couple of times. I directed him in a couple of things. And he did a play where he was wearing, like, he wore a really bad fake mustache, like a bad, like, porn mustache in the play. And I'm like, why didn't you grow the mustache out, man? And he's like, because you know why? There's 24 hours in a day. I'm in this play for 2 hours a night. There are 22 hours left in the day. Not going to walk around. I directed a play called Lake Boat, a David Mamet play. It was the only David Mamet play that I ever directed, and it was one of his earliest plays. And it takes place in the 70s, in like the mid early 70s. And so I made three of the guys in the cast grow mustaches, just mustaches. And on closing night, they did their curtain call, and all three of the guys ran to the bathroom in the theater and shaved immediately before we even did the closing night party. They couldn't get rid of that mustache. They couldn't get rid of those mustaches. But one guy in particular, I mean, it was what, you know, like two of the guys, one guy did like a handlebar mustache, which is not as bad. You know what I mean? And it came in really thick.
Mm-hmm.
Another guy did like your regular porn mustache, and it looked like a porn mustache. But the other guy, not very good at growing mustaches. You know, some people can't grow facial hair.
Yeah, right here,
they have difficulty with facial hair, and it comes in patchy. And sometimes he can't get even you can't even get a mustache in. I've never had that problem, but this guy did. One of the actors did. He had, and his mustache was terrible. It was absolutely terrible. And I told him, you know, no, there will be no fake hair and no fake mustaches in this show. And guys had to grow their hair out, and everything, just to look like it was right at that time.
But what year was this production?
2002.
Okay,
no, so 2001. It was the beginning of 2001. It was like I think January to the beginning of March of 2001.
So this is very much far away from when mustaches kind of make.
Oh no, yeah.
Because now
absolutely.
Mustaches, you can kind of you can do.
Yeah, I mean, well, I do mustaches in November. I do November. And I do a mustache then. But no. This was not. People would look at them and go, "What the hell?" You know. But I put my foot down. I was like, we're just not going to have any fake mustaches. We're not going to have any. If your hair is going to look weird because you're growing it out.
Diva.
Yeah. No, I wanted it to look authentic.
Got to go for the real.
So, I mean.
Method. You
know, yeah. I mean,
Method,
hey,
baby.
Hey, Mamet would have been happy, I think. That was the hardest thing I've ever directed. Mamet's hard, man. Mamet's a really hard playwright to get right, mm-hmm. and to get the rhythm of the dialogue right, and everything in that dialogue. There are certain pauses and certain there are certain like words that are italicized,
mm-hmm.
That he wants you to punch or say in a different manner. And his none of the stuff that David Mamet right sounds natural ever. It all sounds like David Mamet. It's all a very stylized,
heightened reality.
It's got a very, very specific rhythm to it.
Uh-huh.
And it was hard. It was hard for me as a director to get the performances and it was hard for the actors. It was really difficult for the actors to get that down. So here's the thing though. They made a movie out of Lake Boat. Okay. In 2001. It came out about 6 months after we closed. Joe Mantegna directed it, and it's got a great cast, and we went to see it as a group, like all of us got reunited again, and like almost all of the cast members and me and the stage manager, we all went to see it. It was playing at the Landmark, And so we all go to see it, and it was horrible. It was absolutely horrible, and we were stunned by how bad it was, because the actors were all good. The actors, you know, had worked with Mamet before, and Mantegna directed it. Like, you would think Joe Mantegna directing, you know, David Mamet would be a home run. It was absolutely horrendous. I mean, it was horrible. And I, you know, and we sat there, and, you know, like, when it was over, we were looking at each other, we're like, you know what, we seriously did a better production of this play than Joe Mantegna did. So,
no accounting for taste, I suppose.
But it was, so anyway, the mustache thing, they had to wear the mustaches. They had to have the real mustache. I'm serious, I'm not kidding. They bowed, they said their curtain call, and they didn't even get out of costume. They didn't even get out of costume. They got off stage, went right to the bathroom, razors, shaving cream, shaved off the mustache. Then they changed and then came out for the closing night party.
Probably sound like the Chainsaw Massacre right there.
It was ridiculous. It was ridiculous. But they were miserable. These guys were so miserable. Especially
in
the guy.
2001, yeah.
Especially the guy who couldn't grow a mustache, a proper mustache. He was so upset. But it looked great. And the guy who couldn't grow the mustache, the proper mustache, was the biggest doofus and the biggest jerk in the show, the character. So it even looked better because he looked like the jerk that he was in the play. So that was fun directing that show. It was hard. It was great. All right, method acting. Hilary Swank, before landing her breakout role in Boys Don't Cry, Hilary Swank spent a month preparing for her audition by living as a man, cutting her hair, binding her breasts, and sticking socks down the front of her jeans. She was so convincing, longtime neighbors believed Swank had invited either her brother or cousin to move in for the summer. Oh. Yeah, it was a sneeze. But it was Swank, it was her intense regimen leading up to Million Dollar Baby that had even Clint Eastwood worried about her. Swank spent 6 days a week in the gym for 3 months, gaining 19 pounds of pure muscle. She was so in the zone, she didn't even register when a huge blister erupted over her foot. A doctor's visit confirmed it was a staph infection, and one that was mere hours away from reaching her heart.
Oh, my God.
Isn't that nuts?
Well, and I mean, she looks the part. I guess it kind of pays off.
She's great in that movie.
Yeah.
It's weird that somebody goes method on a Clint Eastwood set, though. I mean, I'm sure, no, because he directed Mystic River, too, which had a bunch of method guys in it.
That's true.
But because he's so not method. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, Clint is like, all right, set up the shot. Go ahead. And he doesn't say action. He never says action. He never yells action. You know why he never yells action?
Why?
Because it spooks the horses. Because he made westerns. He made westerns. And somebody That's would true. Scream action, and it would spook the horses. So he goes, because it spooks the horses. And, like, everybody talks about how, you know, and quite the complete opposite of what we were talking about with Fincher. Clint, one take. I got to get to the golf course.
Yeah. Get the hell away from my Gran Torino.
Yeah. But he and you know what? He makes good movies. And he's made some turkeys, but yeah. I mean, like, for the most part, as a director, he's made some amazing movies.
Yeah, I want you to frame up on the fake baby here.
Like, yeah. Which that's not one of his good movies. But like, you know, I mean, you can't argue with a movie like Unforgiven. Unforgiven is one of the greatest movies ever made.
It's like the Western.
I mean, it's not
anti-Western, but like kind of the Western that recontextualizes Westerns in a lot of ways.
David Peoples wrote it.
So good.
Yeah.
I might watch that now. I might watch it. It's one
of the
hours.
Best. It's one of the best movies. It's seriously, I think it's Clint. It's my favorite Clint Eastwood movie as a director and as an actor. Mm. I think he's unbelievable in it.
Gene Hackman turned in. He's batting 100.
Morgan Freeman.
Uh-huh.
Come on now. Richard Harris. Oh, amazing. All right. Another guy, Richard Harris, method. And his method was booze. All right, let's take a quick break. And we've got more method acting to talk about. We want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. Mickey Rourke is up next in the method acting world. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. It's Wild Card Wednesday. You remember Wild Card Wednesday? Any artist, any song, anything, 312-981-7200. Who requested and what was that?
So that was Tame Impala performing Patience. You might have seen them on SNL a couple, I think, either last week or the week before. And that's coming from the 630.
Okay. Welcome back, everybody. We are talking about method acting, and sometimes it goes too far in some of the most famous method acting performances. And if you want to jump in with your thoughts on that, it's 312-981-7200. I mentioned Mickey Rourke for his role as a broken-down piece of meat in Darren Aronofsky's The Wrestler. Mickey Rourke insisted on performing the majority of his own stunts, leading to several injuries. And if that wasn't enough, the actor took his training one step further when he showed up at WrestleMania 25, where he knocked out Chris Jericho with one punch. And Rourke wasn't content to just rest on his wrestler success. For his role as the villainous Ivan Vanko, also known as Whiplash in Iron Man 2, Rourke visited Russian prisons and befriended several inmates to understand his character. He also studied Russian for 3 to 4 hours every day to fully immerse himself. Really? He did for that?
For a Marvel movie? I don't know.
You know, that's one of the saddest wastes of a comeback ever.
Could have been the one.
Oh my God, he was amazing in The Wrestler, and that movie is great. And I remember thinking, wow, that's cool, because at one point Mickey Rourke was a badass. Like there was a time when Mickey Rourke was like a beautiful looking dude and an amazing actor who really gave great performances. And when he fell on hard times, it was really, you know, really sad. And then, like, when The Wrestler, I was rooting for him so much. And he didn't win the Oscar that year. Method Man Sean Penn won for Milk. But he did win the Independent Spirit Award. Have you ever seen his acceptance speech?
I've not. I knew he won it, but I did not see the speech.
You need to see it. It is, first of all, the Independent Spirit Awards are a blast because nobody's given any time limit. His speech is 6.5 minutes long. And it's also not censored. And it is, without question, Mickey Rourke's acceptance speech for Best Actor in The Wrestler for the Independent Spirit Awards is the best acceptance speech I've ever seen from any human being ever. It is unbelievable and unbelievably hilarious. So, how about Rooney Mara? Let's see any male method actor go as far with body modification as Rooney Mara did in The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo to play punk hacker Lisbeth Salander. Mara bleached her eyebrows, chopped off her hair, and had her eyebrow, lip, nose, and nipples pierced, in addition to learning martial arts, skateboarding, and motorcycle riding. A lesser-known but equally uncomfortable feat for Mara was during her recent performance in A Ghost Story, where her recently widowed character sits down on the floor and eats the entire... Oh, my God. An entire chocolate pie in one take before running into the bathroom and vomiting it up. Even more bizarre, Mara claims to this day that this is the first and last time that she had ever tasted pie. That's one of my favorite scenes in that movie.
It's great.
It's just her sitting there on the floor eating pie. It just goes on and on and on. And that's a great movie.
Yeah, I feel like not a lot of people took the opportunity to watch it.
No.
I think you can watch it on Amazon Prime now or something.
David Lowery is the director of that movie.
Yeah.
And his last movie was terrific. The Old Man with the Gun was great. Hell, Pete's Dragon was great. He's one of those guys who does a different thing every time out and does it well. Nicolas Cage.
Yes.
Okay. Total method. And my favorite story about Nicolas Cage, according to this guy, going method, is from the 80s dark comedy Vampire's Kiss, which, by the way, is one of the greatest movies ever made.
Oh, my God.
The scene called for his character, a rich New York book agent who believes he's turned into a bloodsucker, to devour a cockroach. Note, the director planned on swapping out a live critter for a fake one, an edible prop, but Cage insisted on eating the real thing, and he did it twice. So if you're watching Vampire's Kiss, that's actually a real cockroach that he eats. A real living cockroach that he picks up, puts in his mouth, and eats. And that's only the beginning. Nicolas Cage's career is littered with strange methodology, from the weird high-pitched voice he affected for his first role in Peggy Sue Got Married. That wasn't his first role. His first role was in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Mm. But he was great in Pay. He got married. Having four of his own teeth pulled for Birdie without anesthesia. Whatever you want to say about Cage's wacky performances, you can never doubt the man's commitment to his craft. He's unbelievable in Vampire's Kiss.
I can never get the scene where he's running down the street screaming, "I'm a vampire."
Well, my favorite moment in that entire movie. And I love that movie, and I love him in it. It's truly, it's the best performance he's ever given. He's insanely good in that movie. And crazy. But my favorite is when he's talking to his therapist, played by Elizabeth Ashley. And he doesn't, how do you not know how to alphabetize?
Yeah.
And he goes through the entire alphabet. I remember sitting in the theater watching the movie going, is he going to go through the entire alphabet? I wouldn't know. Who did? He's unbelievable. Peter Lowe. I love that movie. I love him so much in that movie. All right, we'll take a break. More method acting coming up. We got a bunch of texts coming in, too. So, we'll be back after the news, which is next.
Don't pour your love out on me, baby. If you do, then I'll claim to maybe I'll just lay me down right for 100 years. Don't pour your love out on me, honey. Take my heart, my soul, my money. But don't leave me drowning in my tears.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. We're going to be talking about weird food combinations that definitely shouldn't exist. That's coming up. But right now we're talking about method acting and when it goes too far and some of the craziest and most method performances of all time. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. Who requested that?
So that was Squat.
Squat.
Yeah, he's been throwing in requests the last couple of weeks, and sometimes we don't get to him, so want to make sure we got Squat.
Again, Squat got in there. Okay, cool. It's Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah! And we're getting back to this method talk here. We got a few texts. 607 area code says, Rod Steiger was a method actor. He indeed was. 608 area code says, I can't remember the name of the movie, but didn't Matt Damon lose a whole bunch of weight for some Gulf War movie? He did. And it says, I believe it almost killed him, and then Tom Hanks and Castaway, which we mentioned earlier. I can't remember the name of that movie.
Gulf War.
Yeah.
It's not Three Kings, because that's...
No.
I was confused, Matt Damon, with...
With who?
With...
Mark Wahlberg?
Yeah, I know.
What?
I know. It's a weird thing in my brain that just doesn't work sometimes.
Okay. That happens with me all the time. Portia de Rossi. Portia de Rossi is the one that's married to Ellen DeGeneres, yes. Right? She was on Arrested Development, right?
Yes, correct.
Okay. The other one I can't is Drea from the Sopranos. Drea DiMatteo.
Oh,
I get them confused all the time.
Yeah.
All the time. They don't look alike, you know what I mean? But I just get them confused
something
all the time.
It. Yeah.
It's not as Dylan McDermott, Dermot Mulroney. 214 Erico says, I like your criticism of Costner and Dances with Wolves. That movie sucks all the way to the moon and back. I agree.
That's a good way to put it.
I agree. All right, we finally get to this article, and they mentioned Dustin Hoffman. It takes work to piss off a consummate professional like Meryl Streep, but Dustin Hoffman is nothing if not committed to get the performance he thought was necessary for her character in Kramer vs. Kramer. Hoffman taunted Meryl, who played his ex-wife during a contentious divorce, about her recently deceased boyfriend. And by the way, that boyfriend that was recently deceased is the late great John Cazale.
Wait, so...
So he was mocking John Cazale, who... was one of the best actors ever to get her to where she needed to be. And then before a take, he slapped her in the face right before a take.
You know, I got to say, I cannot approve on any level.
Oh,
I
no.
I don't care about what performance you're trying to get.
That's completely, you know, and Meryl Streep has said, on record that he was the worst actor that she's ever, like in terms of behavior, is the worst actor she's ever worked with.
I can only imagine.
There's a scene in the movie too it's actually a used take in the movie where she comes back because she leaves him, and he has to raise the little boy, and then she out of nowhere comes back and says she wants the kid, and then the rest of the movie is this, you know, this battle, you know, right. for custody of the kid. So he meets her in a restaurant in the scene in the movie, and there's a couple of glasses of wine on the table, and they're like full, and so she basically says to him, you know, I want the kid back, blah blah blah. He goes nuts and smashes the wine glass against the wall and shatters glass everywhere, and wine goes flying. Didn't tell her he was going to do it, and that's the take in the movie. And if you watch Meryl Streep in that take, that's Hoffman, man.
I mean, yeah,
I think he's mellowed out since then. Because
I should hope so.
And then they also mentioned the Marathon Man story that I talked staying a little bit earlier. Yeah, staying up for 72 hours and not sleeping and then just having the greatest actor of all time just say, why don't you try acting, my dear boy? let's see. Here we go. Dennis Hopper. Dennis Hopper was an actor who approached method a tad differently than traditional school, opting for more of a Hunter S. Thompson type of immersion. For his cameo in Apocalypse Now as a photojournalist caught up in Captain Kurtz's jungle cult, Hopper maintained a large, steady diet of speed, weed, and LSD. You could argue that this wasn't method acting so much as drug addiction. Hopper couldn't memorize his lines, leading director Francis Ford Coppola to beg the actor what he could do to help. Hopper's response, an ounce of cocaine, man. And while that didn't help his memory, Hopper did end up improvising one of the most weird monologues in cinematic history. Boy, yeah. I mean, I can't even imagine. How about this? Charlize Theron. Is there some rule that says that it's not method unless you gain or lose exactly 30 pounds? We've seen that number before. But boy, was it ever evident when Charlize Theron underwent a complete physical transformation, packing on weight to play serial killer Eileen Wuornos in 2003's Monster, for which she won an Academy Award. Luckily, those weren't her real teeth in the film, but Theron's chompers were far from safe. While preparing to play an international spy in the recent action film Atomic Blonde, Theron bruised her ribs, twisted her knee, and yes, clenched her teeth so hard she broke two of them. Maybe going full method requires extreme weight change and oral trauma. Yeah. So, and another thing, I guess, they didn't, the Charlize Theron, speaking of Charlize Theron, it's kind of, you know, really famous now, the stories that went on between her and Tom Hardy on the set of Mad Max Fury Road. They hated each other. They absolutely hated each other. And, you know, George Miller did everything he could to try and get them to get along, but they just did not get along at all. Their styles of acting were so different. And so they did not get along on Fury Road. Marlon Brando is here. The godfather of method, Marlon Brando studied under both Stella Adler and Elia Kazan in New York City. For his Broadway debut in 1946, Truckline Cafe, the actor would run up and down flights of stairs before a stagehand dumped an icy bucket of water on his head to simulate his character emerging from a lake. Playing an injured World War II lieutenant in The Men, Brando spent a whole month in bed at a veterans hospital. But my personal favorite anecdote is how Brando wanted to shut down the production of The Island of Dr. Moreau for over a month to rewrite the script and reveal that underneath his hat, the good doctor was actually a dolphin. Have you, by the way, seen the documentary about the making of Island of Dr. Moreau?
No.
Have you seen Island of Dr. Moreau?
I have seen it. I've not seen the documentary.
The original director of Island of Dr. Moreau. Oh man, when I'm blanking on his name. Boy, hold on a second. I'll get it. But anyway, the Island of Dr. Moreau, the version that they did with Marlon Brando, David Thewlis, Val Kilmer, Fairuza Balk, was riddled with all kinds of problems. And hold on a second.
So you wanted the original director?
the original director of...
I know, because this one...
Richard Stanley.
Because it ended up going to John Frankenheimer.
Right. Well, Frankenheimer ended up with the credit, but the original director was Richard Stanley. And he couldn't control Brando, because Brando was nuts. He couldn't control Val Kilmer, because Val Kilmer went all method and nuts. They didn't get along. Val Kilmer was insulting Brando and doing a really, really good imitation of Brando to his face. Brando kept showing up and wanting to rewrite the script. He was like another, he was 400 pounds. He saw what was, at that point in history, the world's littlest man, who he said, I want him in every scene I'm in, and I want him dressed exactly like me. So if you watch the movie, this very, very small person, extraordinarily small person, is dressed, and he's with, because he took a liking to the guy. He took a liking to the little man and wanted him in every scene. No explanation, no reason.
Is that the inspiration for Mini-Me, do you think?
Oh, of course it is. Yeah. Yeah, there's no question about
the references.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, and the movie is just, it is a train wreck of biblical proportion. And what happened was Richard Stanley, this was like a dream project of his, wanted to make the movie. And had a couple of really terrific movies. He had a couple of really terrific B sci-fi horror movies under his belt. He did Dust Devil and Hardware, which is one of the best crazy robot sci-fi movies ever made. And they're both very intense and very crazy and very violent. And he was clashing with the studio. He couldn't control the set. Val Kilmer was insane. Marlon Brando, insane. Fairuza Balk was having an affair with David Thewlis. At the time, it was a nightmare. And then the weather was bad. The island that they were at, there like a typhoon came in, wiped out all the sets. It put massive delays on the shooting schedule, and it like tripled the budget of the movie. And eventually, he got fired. So they fire Richard Stanley now. But here's the thing: for people who don't know what Island of Dr. Moreau is about, Marlon Brando plays this insane doctor who's doing experiments on men/animals. They're like half animals, half men. He's doing genetic experiments on these creatures, like these sort of animal monsterish creatures. So there's a ton of makeup effects in the movie, and a ton of people, extras, and a ton of people in full-on, you know, latex makeup, animal fur, that kind of stuff. So Richard Stanley gets canned from the movie. But he still has friends on set who were supporting him because they were there, you know, while he had to deal with this nightmare, not just the weather, but all of the insanity that was going on the set. So they fire him. He comes back, goes to the makeup chair, gets put under makeup, becomes a creature to observe what's happening on his movie. Frankenheimer comes in to finish the movie, and he just walks in, lets Brando and Kilmer do whatever the hell they want, and he just wants to get the movie done. So Richard Stanley was on set. No, you know, he had friends. Nobody said anything, and he observed what was going on. He wanted to see what was happening. It was his dream project, and he watched it from underneath like massive animal makeup to see what happened. I can't believe he never wrote a book about it, but there's a documentary. There's a documentary about the whole debacle of making that movie, and it's fantastic.
He appears in the documentary Jodorowsky's Dune as well.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, that's where I know this guy from.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you've not seen Hardware, I mean, Dust Devil is really good, but Hardware is great.
I'm going to check it out.
Hardware is a great movie. So, all right, let's take a break for the weather, and we'll come back and we'll wrap up the conversation about method acting gone too far. These actors, they're all nuts. listen, I married one, and I directed a bunch. So I know actors are all nuts. I've seen it all. They're all nuts. And my future ex-wife, Dana DiLorenzo, she's a little nuts too, but in a really good way. But she's still kind of crazy. All right. Let's see. We got a forecast here from the WGN Chicago Weather Center. For today, high temps in the low 40s, nearly 25 degrees cooler than it was yesterday. Showers overnight. Tomorrow, showers and thunderstorms with severe storms possible later. Highs in the 50s far north, 70 far south. For Friday, mostly cloudy, highs in the 50s, falling into the 40s during the afternoon. Saturday, highs in the upper 40s, an increase in cloudiness overnight with a chance of rain towards morning. And then Sunday, highest temperatures fail to reach the 40-degree mark, occasional rains possibly mixed with snow. It is currently 38 degrees in at O'Hare. It's 40 degrees at Midway, 37 degrees at the lakefront. Let's take a break, and we'll come back with more after this on 720 WGN.
The way you mug me, it's unspeakable pain. It's a personal washout down a bottomless drain. It's abhorrently taxing. It's unbelievable. Kiss this, kiss this. Hey, IRS, kiss this,
yeah.
Kiss this.
You want to explain who requested that and what?
Yeah, let me pull that up here. So that was Glenn requesting that in honor of upcoming Tax Day.
Mm-hmm.
It's a parody of This Kiss.
Right.
And it's a little message to the IRS, I guess, from Glenn.
Okay. All right, Glenn. Not getting a refund this year, Glenn? Hey, welcome back. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Coming up at 5 is Steve Grzanich with the opening bell. Coming up also, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. We've been talking about method acting, and sometimes it goes too far. How about Jared Leto?
Oh, my God.
Jared Leto, who will always be Jordan Catalano. I don't care how much method he does. He's always going to be Jordan Catalano. Another variance on the Joker method was Jared Leto's portrayal of the Crown Prince of Crime in 2016 Suicide Squad. Oh, what an awful movie. While Ledger turned his destruction inward, Leto looked to pranking cast members in gruesome ways, including gifting a live rat to his on-screen love interest, Margot Robbie. What an idiot. Leto also sent a dead hog to castmates and gave Will Smith an envelope full of bullets. Additionally, the actor refused to speak to his co-stars throughout the entirety of filming. For other performances, Leto gave himself gout for Chapter 27, lived in the streets, and gave up sex for Requiem for a Dream. And for his Oscar-winning turn in Dallas Buyers Club, he dropped 30 pounds and waxed himself head to toe.
I'm going to say it. I think Jared Leto is a punk like 90% of the time. In terms of, he's turned in a few performances that I really, really adore, but the rest of the time, I just don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he was in My So-Called Life. He's Jordan Catalano. He's always going to be Jordan Catalano.
And that's one of them. That's an untouchable.
He's fantastic.
He's great.
That. How about for Natalie Portman? Darren Aronofsky's Black Swan in 2010, Portman trained 16 hours a day and lost 22 pounds. Like, she was so skinny in that movie. Cause, I mean, first of all, she's thin already, as it is, and she loses 22 pounds. The actress also suffered injuries. One severe enough was a dislocated rib to put her out of production for a short period of time. Let's not forget that marrying the dance instructor for the film and having two of his children should court as a lifetime achievement award of creative immersion. Christian Bale.
Here we are.
Sometimes we wonder if Christian Bale knows how much Christian Bale is supposed to weigh. It's almost like the British actor spent his last decade choosing roles based on the maximum weight gain or loss that it will require. From starving himself down to 121 pounds for The Machinist, which, by the way, if you've not seen that movie, it's a terrific movie, but it's what he did is just, it is mind-boggling and stunning and so creepy. Then Bale bulked up to 190 pounds for his next role in Batman Begins. And then way down again for The Fighter before going up to 223 pounds in American Hustle. You know, and by the way, it's incredibly dangerous to do that, to lose that much weight and gain it back and to lose it and gain it back. That's incredibly dangerous to do that, especially, you know, on a repeatedly.
Mm-hmm.
For his latest film, Vice, Bale got out of shape to play the heart attack prone former VP Dick Cheney by eating a lot of cherry pies.
No, there's worse things you could do for the love of your job.
And then finally, Sean Penn. We mentioned Casualties of War. Sean Penn may not be the easiest actor to get along with, but no one can accuse him of becoming a diva once he hits stardom. Note, from his very first role in Fast Times at Ridgemont High, writer Cameron Crowe found out quickly that the actor he hired to play the laid-back stoner would only respond to his character's name, Jeff, in between takes. Later in his career, he managed to freak out no less than a theatrical weirdo than John Leguizamo.
Why would they describe John Leguizamo as a theatrical weirdo?
I mean, he's pretty weird.
Well, because he plays weird characters. He's terrific. John Leguizamo's great.
Yeah, I'm not trying
to. That guy. He co-starred with the actor in Casualties of War. The scene itself was brutal. Penn's character had kidnapped a young girl for his squad's pleasure. And when Leguizamo's character refuses, Penn didn't just pretend to beat the actor into submission. He actually assaulted him on camera. And this article does not even go into the way he treated Michael J. Fox during the shooting of the film. But, you know, the result is pretty fantastic.
Yeah, I mean...
And then 309 area code says, Robert Shaw as Quint, the USS Arizona. It's Indianapolis, not Arizona. Indianapolis speech has been done in one take, and he was plastered as Quint would be. Well, he was also plastered as Robert Shaw would be.
Didn't he, like, go to Canada after every, I don't know, shooting period?
Because he was
trying to avoid taxes something
weird?
Yeah,
well, also, Robert Shaw was a drunk. Robert Shaw was a major, major drunk. And he was drunk a lot during the filming of Jaws. But so drunk during the Indianapolis monologue that Spielberg set up 5 cameras. And the take that you see in the movie, he is bombed. Shaw is bombed. And he finished it. By the way, it's one of the greatest monologues in movie history. That's one of the greatest monologues and one of the best delivered monologues in movie history. And yes, he was completely smashed. And he passed out. As soon as he was done with the monologue, boom, his head hit the table and he passed out. And that's the take they use in the movie. But it wasn't really method acting. He was just a drunk. Robert Shaw was just a drunk.
What a method.
Yeah. All right. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk some food after the news. Weird food combinations that definitely shouldn't exist. We'll do that right after this. If you want to wrap this up, if you have any texts or anything about method acting, 312-981-7200. News is after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. We're here until 5 a.m. And, we're here every weekday morning, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah, man! Who requested that? What was that for Wildcard Wednesday?
So that was Sandy requesting Bobby Darin's Abilene.
All right, Bobby Darin's Abilene.
My first station was Abilene, Texas.
Is that right?
There was not a lot there, I'll be honest, but there was the best brisket I've ever had.
Oh!
And you know what it was, Nick? It was a junkyard that was located off the base. It was called Dyess Air Force Base, and I think it's since closed, but... Dyess Air Force Base, they used to keep the B-1 bomber there. And off the base, there was a junkyard ran by a guy who retired as a master sergeant from the Air Force, and he started a junkyard. And in the back of the junkyard, he had a kitchen where he made the best brisket and sold it, like a little restaurant.
I wonder if he's still around.
I doubt it.
Yeah?
I would be shocked. He was probably kept in business by the base, the airmen that were stationed there.
Oh, yeah.
And it was located very close to the base, but yeah, wow. Wow.
Great brisket, huh?
Great brisket.
Wow. Oh, I love a good brisket.
Nice backyard brisket.
I love when people, open up like restaurants in weird places.
Oh, man, this was the weirdest, Nick.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable.
You know, that's one of the reasons why I like to watch a lot of those food travel shows, because they'll seek out, you know, some of the weirdest places where you can get food, and then a lot of the weirder places is the best stuff. You know what I mean? Like, the weirder the place, sometimes the better the food.
Right, right.
Which is really a part of the appeal of watching those food travel shows. Even with the frosted tip tattooed garbage can who travels the nation. the thing about Guy Fieri is that I can't stand him, but I like the show.
because you get to see some really cool places, and you know, it's just that that's what I refer to him as, the frosted tip tattooed human garbage can. That's you get to watch him stuff his face. That's the worst part of the show, is watching him stuff his face. But like going to cool places and seeing them. And it's always fun when a lot of these traveling shows, and there's a ton of them. It's not just Guy Fieri. There's a ton of them. I mean, the best one, obviously, was Bourdain. Nobody even came close. Anthony Bourdain, nobody even came close.
Oh, it's great. It's great.
He was the best. He was the best. And one of the things about him was that his message of inclusion was what was so important about Bourdain. Like, you know, like he encouraged people to travel around the world and learn about different cultures that you might not understand by meeting with people and eating with them. That was the point of his show. And drinking, too, because he drank a lot on that show. But, you know, he was something, man. He was actually like a hero of mine. I love his books. I loved his shows. And that's the gold standard of the, what is now considered a subgenre of the food traveling shows, of which there are now like 20.
I picked up his first book that he wrote back when he was an up-and-coming chef.
Yeah. And the Kitchen Confidential?
Yes.
Yeah.
Man, the first... I was reading it at the Ogilvy Transportation Center the other day, killing some time. And wow,
it's unbelievable.
I've got to get that book.
It's
the first
great
five
book.
Pages were just incredible.
It's a great book. And that's the book that put him on the map. You know, he was an up-and-coming chef at that time, and he was known pretty well, but like that, like, because that's an expose of what it's really like.
Yeah, you can really tell just in the way he writes. I mean, it's just like, it's behind-the-scenes look at that industry.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, speaking of, nice way to bring up the brisket, because we're going to talk about food right now. Vic, way to transition. Way to segue.
I didn't even get the memo.
No. You know? Wow. Here's what they say here. Some food combinations seem strange at first, but they turn out to be delicious, surprisingly. But we're thinking specifically of like combos, like pineapple on pizza, prosciutto and honeydew melon, french fries dipped in a milkshake. The first person that tries these combos gets some strange looks, but now nobody bats an eye over somebody ordering a Hawaiian pizza. No, I'll bat my eye. Pineapple should not be anywhere near a pizza. And by the way, you know, people are always saying it's called Hawaiian pizza, but as we've discovered, as we do often on this show, we talk a lot about food. The Hawaiian pizza, or the pineapple on a pizza, was actually created in Canada. It was a Canadian thing. So, and I'm sure that Canadian Bill will chime in on that on the fact that that's a real thing.
Aloha, eh?
Yeah. So. Here are some. We don't really know who invented the following bizarre food combinations, but we're pretty sure that they have stomachs made of cast iron. All right, how about this one? Banana cinnamon pizza. And I'm looking at the box of this. Banana cinnamon pizza. It's, we've heard of a dessert pizza before, but this is on a whole new level of yuck. The pizza contains a delightful combo of banana, cinnamon, mozzarella, and condensed milk. Ugh. That sounds disgusting. But they're selling it. That's what it is. Condensed milk, banana, cinnamon, and mozzarella. And a small cinnamon banana pizza is $12.95. $12.95 in case the next time you want to order for delivery.
Yeah.
$12.95.
I mean, it wouldn't be so bad if it weren't for the mozzarella and condensed milk.
Well, sure, banana and cinnamon is fine.
That's fine.
That's
but
fine.
Why the mozzarella?
And why the condensed milk?
That's the real question. That's what I don't
get. Yeah. I'm assuming there were drugs involved. How about mushroom, peaches, and blue cheese? You can get this. It's mushroom, peaches, and blue cheese in a strawberry vinaigrette. It's like a you can scoop that out at your deli. Mushroom, peaches, and blue cheese in a strawberry vinaigrette.
I don't care if it's drizzled with strawberry vinaigrette. This meal sounds utterly nauseating, they say. Who in their right mind ever thought combining mushrooms and peaches would be a good idea, much less binding it all together with the stinkiest soft cheese imaginable? That does sound disgusting. So far, none of these things sound even remotely edible. We've talked about weird foods in the past. We've done it many, many, many times. We've talked about weird foods. We've talked about strange combinations of foods. But, I mean, that's not, none of this. So far, this is all disgusting. The mushroom, peaches, and blue cheese with a strawberry vinaigrette.
It seems like they went out of their way.
Gun to your head, which one would you rather eat?
Which one?
Yep.
Which one? Between, what was the question?
Between the two you've mentioned.
Banana cinnamon pizza with condensed milk and mozzarella, or peaches, mushrooms, blue cheese.
The pizza.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the pizza, for sure.
Oh.
How about a pear, mayo, and cherry salad? According to all recipes, this is indeed an actual recipe that you can make. Sweet and delightful. Pears are filled with mayonnaise and cheese and then topped off with festive cherries. It's a sure party pleaser. I guarantee if you serve this to your guests at your next party, people will be running for the door or the bathroom. It brings to mind the sort of gross old-fashioned recipes that our grandparents used to make, except with less gelatin. That's another fun thing to talk about that we've talked about in the past on the show, are old-school recipes that are just absolutely revolting. And so many of them, as we've discussed and discovered on this show, so many of them have gelatin. And I don't know what the obsession was back in the day, but gelatin it was required in every single recipe required some sort of gelatin component.
It's part of the war rations or something?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Mm. But, all right, more weird food combinations that definitely shouldn't exist. If you want to jump in with weird food combinations, or maybe old school recipes that your mom or grandmom used to make, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200, weird. All right, here's your forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center. Today, high temps in the low 40s and all about 25 degrees colder than it was on Tuesday, and we'll have showers overnight. For tomorrow, showers, thunderstorms, with severe storms possible later, highs in the 50s far north, near 70 far south. For Friday, mostly cloudy, highs in the 50s, falling into the 40s during the afternoon. For Saturday, highs in the upper 40s, an increase in cloudiness overnight, chance of rain towards morning. And then on Sunday, the highest temperatures will fail to reach even 40 degrees, with occasional rain mixed with wet snow. Currently 38 degrees at O'Hare, 40 at Midway, 37 at the lakefront. 312-981-7200 is a phone number. Talk and text. And we are talking about the weird food combinations that just simply should not exist. And so far, the items that we've talked about sound disgusting. So we would love to hear from you, weird food items or weird combinations. 312-981-7200. Catch Living Healthy Chicago this Saturday at 9 a.m. Learn about the struggles and successes of everyday Chicagoans with health and fitness. Living Healthy, Saturday at 9 a.m. on WGN-TV. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, and we're here until 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude every weekday morning from 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell right after my show at 5. Steve Cochran has your morning drive at 6. We are talking we've got this article here that is talking about weird food combinations that definitely shouldn't exist. And some of these are really disgusting. We were talking about some of the weird combinations that you've tried and that you would like to share with us at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. That's talk and text. Who requested the T-Rex?
That was our good friend Ike.
Ike requesting the T-Rex. All right. There you go. All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. All right, let's get back to some of the weird food combinations, but we have some people who are calling up, and we'd love to hear from you. Talk or text at 312-981-7200. Here's Linda on WGN. Hi, Linda.
Hi.
Hi.
The strange combination. Dressing, you know, like stuffing with that slices of cranberry sauce on it.
You think that's weird?
Yes.
Well, see, for me...
And then dressing...
For me, that doesn't seem weird because whenever I have Thanksgiving dinner, everything gets on one plate and is pretty much mixed up, including cranberry sauce and gravy on everything. You know, like when I have a Thanksgiving dinner, there are a ton of things on it, and they all pretty much get mixed up.
But that is, I'm 68 years old. I never could eat that sweet stuff on my dressing.
Ah, okay.
Never. I think that's the strangest thing in the world. And then people have ham and applesauce. That's crazy.
Pork is good with apples. Apples and pork are a great combination. It's a classic combination. It's a classic combination. Pork and apples and applesauce, all that stuff, yeah.
Yuck. Trouble.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Linda.
Okay. Bye.
All right. Yeah. No, I don't see an issue with cranberry sauce, you know, mixed up with your stuffing. I don't see that as being an issue at all. Like I said, you know, I think a lot of people when they eat Thanksgiving dinner, it's just all piled on one plate. You know, you got your vegetable, you got your corn, you got your mashed potato, you got your stuffing or dressing, whatever you want to call it. You got your cranberry sauce, you got your turkey, and everything is covered in gravy. And you just eat it like a pig.
would you get like a feed bag?
Just put a feed bag on.
Welcome there. The Nick DiGilio Thanksgiving bag.
That's why I think the flavor bowl is at KFC is one of the greatest things of all time. it's the greatest thing of all time. All right, how about this? Waffles and pasta sauce.
That's criminal.
It says, who decided that this was worth... The picture, by the way, is just ridiculous. It's like two waffles covered in pasta sauce and with a nice garnish of parsley on top to make it look even more appetizing. It said, who decided this was worth trying? Waffles equal good, spaghetti sauce equal good, but together, no. Hard pass. How about this? Cherry blossom flavored Lay's. Now, we did a topic a couple of weeks ago about like really weird flavored, strangely flavored foods from around the world, and we discovered that Kit Kat around the world, Kit Kat has probably the most variety of the weirdest variations and flavors that you can imagine doing to a Kit Kat bar. And then a close second was Lay's. But this has got to be one of the weirdest. This has probably got to be one of the weirdest combinations, though. It says, granted, the writer says, I've never actually eaten a cherry blossom, so I can't say for sure that they're not delicious. But still, cherry blossoms are flower petals. So they probably taste like, well, flower petals. So no thanks. Cherry blossom flavored Lay's. Ay, ay, ay. Here's John on WGN. Hi, John.
Hey, Nick. How are you?
All right. What's up?
So my son just graduated from college last year, and he's living out in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And his mom and I always worry about whether he's eating enough or not. And one day we were talking to him, and I said, well, just make some pasta. And he goes, I can't. I go, why? He says, I don't have any red hot sauce, Frank's red hot sauce. I go, wait a second. You make pasta, and all you add to it is Frank's red hot. And he goes, yeah. I'm like, I want to throw up just thinking about that.
Oh, my God.
That's his go-to meal.
is pasta with Frank's red hot sauce.
Yes. Exactly.
Oh, my God. That is pretty weird. That's pretty weird. But you know what? College students eat weird stuff.
They do. I think they could eat anything and get away with it.
Oh, sure. So. Anything that's cheap, you know. I'm assuming that your son is he has a nice supply of ramen, I would imagine.
He's not a ramen guy. He'll get like a rotisserie chicken. And it'll last him a whole week because it'll add it to to five different meals to get everything he could out of the chicken. And he's a mechanical engineer, so it's not like he doesn't make money, right? He just hates the idea of cooking. So if it wasn't for his mom's desire to make sure that he's fed and, hit Costco delivery once a month, I think this kid would basically eat Belvita and pasta with
red hot sauce.
With red hot sauce.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Exactly.
All right, that's great. John, thanks for the call, man.
All right, man. Have a good day.
You too. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Let's see. 205 area code. We're talking about weird food combinations that just shouldn't exist. 205 area code says banana and mayo sandwich. Now, is that pro? Is this this text seems to be pro banana and mayo sandwich. Because that's all it says. It doesn't say anything like that's disgusting. It doesn't say anything like that.
I'd try it, honestly.
Yeah. Well, I'd pretty much try anything. I'm not a picky eater at all. I'm pickier now than I was when I was a kid, though. When I was a kid, you know, I've talked about this before. My parents never had any problem feeding vegetables to me. I liked broccoli. I loved spinach. I loved canned spinach. Liver and onions.
Oh.
Could eat that all day long when I was a kid. I could eat it all day long now, too.
Mm.
So, 773 area code says the dill pickle pizza, yuck. That's all over the internet right now, by the way. Dill pickle pizza. That seems to be some sort of crazy fad that's going all over the place. I can't tell you the number of like small articles or bullet points or just pictures of pizzas filled with dill pickles. It seems to be a thing right now. Okay, we'll take a break. If you guys want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text. The lines are open. We got some more people texting in some weird, crazy food combinations that, man, just shouldn't exist. We'll get back to that conversation after the news, which is up after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline Studio on a Wednesday morning, Wildcard Wednesday, wrapping up this morning.
Yeah!
That's one artist and any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. And who requested the Fanatic?
That was Dan in Marengo.
Dan in Marengo. All right. Welcome back to the show. We're here till 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich coming up at 5 with the opening bell. Steve Cochran at 6. With your morning drive. And we have been talking about some of the weirdest food combinations that definitely shouldn't exist. We've opened up the phone lines and the text lines for you guys to jump in with your weird food combinations. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. How about sausage pork with gummy bears? There's a picture actually from a butcher shop with ground sausage pork, and gummy bears. It's the perfect foundation for all your gummy bear dishes, like meatloaf with gummy bears or perhaps delicious meatballs with gummy bears. File this one under why. I think you could file almost all of these under why. Here's Glenn on WGN. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, good morning, Nick. How are you doing?
All right.
Well, you know, I've had mashed potatoes with ketchup and macaroni cheese and with ketchup, but my wife turned me on years ago to Jell-O with with mayonnaise on it.
Yeah, that I'll be skipping that, Glenn.
It's not bad. It's not bad.
Yeah, that's also that mayonnaise and Jell-O stuff. That is also, as we were talking about in those really old school recipes, everything was Jell-O and everything was mayonnaise. It seemed like in every single episode, every single recipe, no matter what the type of dish it was, there was mayonnaise and or Jell-O involved.
Yeah, I know. I've read some of those old cookbooks.
They're crazy.
And,
crazy.
Yeah.
All right, Glenn. Thanks.
All right.
Take care.
Have a good one.
Yeah.
Bye.
Thanks. Here's Carrie on WGN. Hi, Carrie.
Hey, morning, Nick.
Hey.
Some of these things you got to give a chance. So you made me think the first one you mentioned with the blueberries and the blue cheese and the vinaigrette. I don't get the vinaigrette, but I actually make, if you got to like blue cheese for this, but I make an appetizer where you take grapes and you make like a blue cheese paste, you roll them in it, and then you roll that in crushed walnuts or almonds. Really good. And the flavors go together, but you got to like blue cheese. But then another really weird one that is really good, there's a restaurant in Monroe, Wisconsin that has a liver sausage, Limburger, and onion sandwich on rye bread with mustard. Sounds disgusting. It is really good.
Actually, that to me, that doesn't sound disgusting at all.
No, I mean, you say Limburger, what do you think of? Malaire cheese.
Yeah.
But it's really good, and I tell people, you got to try this, and they're like, that sounds disgusting.
No, I think it sounds great. That sounds like a combination that I would eat the hell out of. I would totally eat that.
Yeah, if you ever go to Monroe, Wisconsin, it's Baumgartner's, and they're famous for that sandwich.
Okay, all right, very cool. That sounds, see, now that sounds good. Might be a weird combination to some people, but that one to me sounds good. Of course, I'm a liver sausage or bratwurst liver sausage, or I'm a freak about liver sausage. I love liver sausage.
My wife hates it. I love it.
I love it. I absolutely love it. All right, Carrie, thanks.
Thanks, Nick.
Bye, buddy. Take care. What about that, Tom? You a liver sausage fan?
I don't get the liver thing. I've tried liver. I just, it's so disgusting in my mouth.
Okay,
it's just
so you don't like liver sausage or liverwurst. It's a
I've never had liverwurst.
Well, it's the same thing. It's essentially the same thing. Liver sausage. Yeah, it's a pate. It's a pate. You can you have it on a sandwich, or you can have it on a cracker.
Yeah, if I'm going to choose anything that's kind of weird, I like blood sausage.
I do too.
I love black pudding.
You're Scottish, yeah, man.
Well, then maybe throw that on there in terms of...
if you didn't like it, I would be disappointed. You like haggis.
Haggis is delicious. I will stand by haggis every day till I die on my feet. It's amazing. It's someone wearing essentially a dress looked at a sheep and said, you know what, I'm going to take all of this, put it inside of its own stomach and feed it to people, and they're gonna love it.
Yeah,
I will die for haggis. It's so good.
Black pudding, blood sausage. I love that stuff.
Who doesn't? It's
fantastic. You know the UK breakfast. Forget it. It's awesome.
Yeah, a little bit of tripe.
We need some baked beans on our bread. In America, we need some baked beans, for breakfast.
Why has it never caught on?
I don't know. I have no
idea. It's a great idea.
No idea. Blood sausage, all of that stuff, fantastic. Just the sliced tomato.
Yep.
Sliced tomato, mm-hmm, right there. It's beautiful. All right. Can you get a really good, in Chicago, can you get a really good English breakfast? Is there a place where you can get it? Because I used to bartend at a place called Ginger's Ale House,
mm-hmm,
which is now called, it's at the corner of Grace and Ashland.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember, Hudson's, something, PJ Hudson's or something like that. And when they opened up a kitchen at Ginger's on Sundays, they did the Irish breakfast, the English or Irish, the UK, mm-hmm, breakfast. Well, Ireland's not in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
That's only been a bone of contention for a couple of years now. yeah, all the Irish people listening right now, we're not in the UK! I'm like, okay, sorry. Anyway, they used to have a great English breakfast, mm-hmm, at Ginger's, like really, really good. So
I haven't gone anywhere that does a proper full. Well, I mean, it depends on where you are, because you can get a full English, a full Irish, or a full Scottish,
right?
And they're all just kind of variations on a theme, but very specific.
Yeah.
And for a full Irish, I just go to Grandma's house.
Well, there you go.
I luck out there.
Well, but I mean, when we were in Ireland, we had that every morning. We had Irish breakfast every single morning.
And the sausages, the breakfast sausages, yeah, my man.
Unbelievable. And we would have it every morning when we were in Ireland, and there's a lot on that plate, man. There's a lot on that plate.
Well, that's for the fellas working out in the bog,
yeah,
you know, harvesting peat moss.
Yeah.
You would think, because normally that's going to put like 20 pounds on you in 2 weeks.
Yeah, well, we were there for well over 2 weeks.
Oh my God.
And,
full breakfast like that
every morning. Maybe we skipped it a couple of times because we were hungover or something, but we ate like pigs when we were on that trip. I'll tell you something, man. There was a pub in Doolin that we went to Now I can't remember the name of it. McGuinn's. It wasn't. It was in Doolin. And it was the, we had a seafood stew. It was the best seafood stew I've ever had in my life. I mean, seafood in Ireland was unbelievable.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable.
You would never, I mean, it makes sense because obviously it's an island, but no one ever thinks Ireland had great seafood.
We had, oh my God, we had fish and chips. We had fish and chips in Galway.
Oh.
And Galway is water everywhere in Galway. And it was the best fish and chips I've ever had in my life. And it was just at a pub. It was just like a, you know, well, because all the pubs serve food. Or 90% of the pubs serve food.
Basically, yeah.
And so, yeah, all the food we had over there was amazing. It was just amazing.
Just fresh. Now, I mean, you have to be careful because I know my mom, when we lived in Scotland for the very brief time when I was very young, she basically lost like 30 pounds just from not eating some of the food because vegetables weren't really a thing. And you could not get a lot of fresh food. A lot of it was bacon, whiskey, grease, and gravy.
Yeah.
And while it is delicious, it is unsustainable for a woman of her age.
That's true. That's true. How about pickle, goldfish, cracker, and mayo sandwich? Again, all of these ingredients are perfectly appropriate on their own, yet when you put them all together on bread, you've got yourself a sandwich that we wouldn't feed to our worst enemy. So you take some pickles, you take some goldfish crackers, you slap some mayo on there.
You replace the goldfish with, like, Lay's? I'd eat that.
Yeah, I guess so. I would actually try the pickled goldfish and mayo sandwich.
I could see that being pretty good.
Yeah. How about frosted flakes? How about cereal and berries and orange juice? Cereal with berries and orange juice. And then you can just put your OJ on your cereal and put it all in one bowl.
That's a time saver.
Yeah. Frosted flakes and cheese. No. I swear if you throw slices of processed American cheese into my cereal, we're going to have a problem. And it's just like chunks. I'm looking at the picture.
Ugh.
It is a bowl of cereal. It's a bowl of frosted flakes, milk, and then just slices of processed American cheese plopped in.
American cheese might be number two list of worst things ever invented.
Oh, I like American cheese.
I can't. I used to like it when I was young, and then I tried, you know, real cheese.
Yeah. But I like American cheese. American cheese is the best cheese because American cheese melts beautifully. If you need a cheese that melts well, American cheese does that. It melts beautifully.
Well, yeah.
And for a grilled cheese, the classic processed American cheese on a grilled cheese, that's like the old school classic grilled cheese. And I know there's 9,000 gourmet cheeses now, or gourmet grilled cheeses, and it's awesome because any kind of cheese I like, but there's something old school and comforting about an American cheese, grilled cheese.
Oh man, I used to work in a grilled cheese joint.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, they're all over. I mean, the kinds of grilled cheese that you can get now are just crazy. All right, we got to take a break here. We got weather, and then we'll come back and we'll wrap up the show and the conversation with all these crazy, weird food combinations that are actual and real. But here's your forecast for today. We got high temperatures in the low 40s, nearly 25 degrees colder than it was yesterday. Showers overnight. For tomorrow, showers, thunderstorms with severe storms possible later. Highs in the 50s in the far north, near 70 in the far south. For Friday, mostly cloudy. Highs in the 50s, falling into the 40s during the afternoon. Saturday, highs in the upper 40s, an increase in cloudiness overnight with a chance of rain toward morning. And then for Sunday, the highest temperatures will not even reach the 40-degree mark, and occasional rain possibly mixed with wet snow. It is currently 38 degrees at O'Hare. It is 40 degrees at Midway, and it's 37 degrees at the lakefront. Take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll wrap it up and more weird food combinations right here on 720 WGN. I thought we could successfully do a Wild Card Wednesday without having to hear REO Speedwagon.
Wrong.
Oh, my God.
Dead wrong.
Who requested REO?
That was Pat.
Pat. Okay. You know,
Oh, by the way, welcome back, everybody. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios, and that was the last of Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah! It'll be back next Wednesday. When I was in high school, that was the theme to our... Time for Me to Fly. Time for Me to Fly was the theme to our homecoming dance one year in high school. It's ridiculous. Because High Infidelity was like the biggest album ever. REO Speedwagon. Weirdos. All right. Coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom here on WGN. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We've been talking about really weird food combinations that shouldn't exist. How about this? Twinkie Wiener sandwiches with mustard. It's a hot dog, which may or may not be cooked, judging by the photo that we're looking at here, inside a sliced Twinkie with mustard. There's nothing really more to say here. So they sliced the Twinkie lengthwise, so it's the bun. You put the hot dog in the bun, and then you put the mustard on the Twinkie, on the hot dog, which is inside the Twinkie. And no, thank you. How about popcorn with ketchup? Oh my God.
Why?
Who would do that? Some people will put ketchup on anything. What did popcorn ever do to you, they say? Who would do that? Who would put ketchup on popcorn?
I mean, that just becomes a ketchup delivery system at that point. It's not popcorn.
No.
Man, it's unholy.
It's ridiculous. And of course, you know, we're in Chicago. If you put ketchup on a hot dog, if you're over the age of 5 and you put ketchup on a hot dog, you should be taken directly to jail. Don't pass go, don't collect $200. Oh wait, here's Mary. Hey Mary.
What did you just say?
I said if you're over the age of 5 and you put ketchup on a hot dog, you should go directly to jail.
That's really nice. I've been putting ketchup on a hot dog my entire life.
You still put ketchup on a hot dog? Even though you're an adult?
Okay, the only place I don't is when I'm at Wrigley Field.
That's the only place
and
you
people
don't.
Are looking at me, and then I put mustard and relish on it.
Okay.
Only time. That's otherwise, it. When I'm at home, I'll
you're
put
at home,
ketchup.
You put ketchup on a hot dog?
Absolutely. There's nothing wrong with it. My children do, too.
Of course your children do. Well, they're not really children anymore, are they?
They are.
Yeah. All right. Again, like I said, if you're over 5 years old, ketchup on a hot dog, right to jail. Directly to jail. I mean, you're a Chicagoan, Mary.
And you wouldn't bail me out?
You would no, not for ketchup on a hot dog.
Oh, man. It's a little harsh. It's a little harsh. I don't put it on anything else. Eggs, which I think is ridiculous when people put ketchup on eggs. That's ugh.
Yeah. Well, I'm not a big ketchup guy. I mean, if I have French fries, which I'm not a big French fry guy, I'll use it on French fries.
I don't even do that.
And burgers, it's fine.
Yeah.
But you put ketchup, and the only thing you put ketchup on is a hot dog?
And a burger.
Okay.
And I had one last night, by the way.
Did you?
Awesome. Cooking out in the grill, yeah.
You had a hot dog with ketchup on it?
No, I had a burger.
Oh, mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
It's nice weather. Bring out the grills.
Not now.
Well, I know. One day.
Yeah.
By the way, my husband is a liver fanatic. He loves liver, liverwurst.
I love it.
Awful.
Love it. And it's weird because, you know, like I was saying, Mary, when I was a kid, I was not a tough kid to have eat. I loved broccoli. I loved vegetables. I loved liver and onions.
Oh.
Everything that all my friends hated, I loved. So my parents did not have a hard time feeding me when I was growing
up. Good for you. That's awesome.
Yeah.
But if he cooks liver, I leave the house.
You leave
the I tried to cook it for him one time. I doused it with wine.
Uh-huh.
I made it with wine, and it tasted a lot. I didn't eat it, but the whole house just smelled for like a week, and I had candles burning and everything.
Just to get rid of the odor of the...
Of liver.
Of the liver.
Yes.
Okay. Good thing you had that bottle of wine.
Well, I didn't drink it. I doused the liver with it. I cooked with it.
Okay.
Well,
all right.
I can't
believe you put ketchup on a hot dog, man.
I do.
I can't believe
it. And I like it, and I'm proud of it.
All right.
Goodbye.
Okay. Have a good day, Mary. All right. 312 area code says, my brother ate peanut butter with liver sausage sandwiches when we were kids. Now, see, I don't know about that. And again, you're, you know,
This is a guy who loves liver sausage talking, but I don't know about peanut butter and liver sausage. That sounds... 630 area code says, bacon mac and cheese pizza is a lot better than it sounds. It doesn't sound bad. I mean, it's not really a pizza.
That's an open-face hamburger.
It's just an open-face. It's like eating bacon mac and cheese, which is delicious, on a piece of bread.
I'm just making it easier.
Yeah. I've had that pear mayo cheese thing. While it does sound bad, it's actually kind of tasty, the 630 area code says. 708 area code says, Italian beef with mayo. No, 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 no. And I enjoy mayonnaise. I do. I'll have mayonnaise on a sandwich, and I'm a, you know. Italian beef with mayo and a dill pickle. No, God, no. No. 815 area code says, I thought Irish breakfast was a little Bushmills in your coffee. Hello, everybody. Hold on.
All right.
Let's reinforce the drunk Irish stereotype. 630 area code says, mayonnaise and strawberry jelly on saltine crackers is yummy. It's salt and sweet. 708 area code says, liverwurst in a jelly sandwich is yum. 630 area code, actually Greg says, hey Nick, have you ever tried liver sausage with sweet relish? No, I have not.
What is actually wrong with the people of this city?
I would try it. I mean, I think it sounds like I wouldn't like it, but I would try it. How about a peanut butter and jelly burger? So you get a PB&J and you stick a burger in the middle of it.
You know what? That actually does sound pretty good.
It does sound good.
I like peanut butter and jelly. I like hamburgers.
Well, why not? I like peanut butter. I like peanut butter on burgers. I've had peanut butter on burgers in the past. It's really actually tasty.
Mm-hmm.
So, and what about tuna fish and barbecue sauce? That doesn't sound bad.
That could be okay.
Yeah.
That could be all right.
All right. So anyway, weird food combinations. By the way, if you want to see pictures of these items and read the full text of the article, it is on our Facebook page. And that's why you should like our Facebook page at facebook.com/NickDShow. All right. We got a break. We're back tomorrow. Dan Feinberg is going to join us from The Hollywood Reporter, and we are going to talk all things TV, lots of television to talk about. And I am going home right now to watch Fosse Vernon. I cannot wait. And we'll talk about that tomorrow. All right. The news is up after this.